members who are still coming will find us moving so that at least we can finish in time. I'm not sure, Mr. whether you are ready. But I've noticed when I was looking at the document, they seem to be thick. I don't think that is a quarterly report. They are too thick for a quarterly report. They look like annual reports. I hope people, when they present, they're going to present quarterly reports, not annual reports. Just stick to what is in the quarter work, which you say we do. We don't want anything else. We just want the financials of the quarter and what you have presented to do in the quarter. Anything else, I'm going to stop you. Because it just end up getting away from what you're supposed to discuss. So if you stick to what you have presented as your quarterly work to do, how far have you dealt with any financials, that will be okay. Nemis? Sorry, Nemis, no relax. I could see the chairperson was rushing. No. Sorry, my apology.
Thank you, Chairperson, for giving us this opportunity to come and make this presentation to the Portfolio Committee. Let me start by informing the members the delegation that I'm with. My delegation consists of the CEO, of which I don't know where he is at the moment. I haven't got any SMS, but I must be honest. And then next to me, it's Prof. Pasa, who is a board member. And then we've got Dr. Bosing, even himself, he hasn't arrived. And then I've got a board secretary and provincial manager. And the provincial manager for Western Cape and the board secretary. And Metandeka Mugadi, who she's an executive manager performance management system.
After all the formalities have said to work.
Yes, Chairperson. Chairperson, I don't know the kind of direction that you like to, but for our presentation, we'll start going straight to the key projects that you would like to us to present to this, which forms the anchor projects. That are in our business plan. And then the key projects as appear on the presentation is the set-top box subsidy as part of the broadcasting digital migration. The second project will be broadband infrastructure project Limpopo Sotsanini. And the third project will be the new public access facilities in other service areas. And the fourth one, it will be the monitoring and evaluation and effective use and social appropriation of ICT. The third project will be the research strategy and policy. So this is how our presentation will look into those projects and reflect what we have done in the first quarter.
No, that will be okay, except that next week you are coming to brief us about digital migration. So we don't want to repeat. So you can present digital migration today, next week, and come and present the same thing. So you stick to what you said you'll do as digital migration on the first quarter. We don't want the entire digital migration.
Thank you, Chairperson. I will be assisted by Nathan Degam Mugadi to take us through and Professor Pasa through the presentation. Yeah. Yeah, over to you, Prof.
What happened to CEO? Are you serious that you don't know where to see you?
Chairperson, I'm very serious. I don't know. No SMS to date, and we don't know.
When you come next time, we'll expect a report what cause of action has the body of taken against the CEO, which decided to disappear, not to come to a meeting.
Because we were with him here last night.
Thank you. On the next meeting, when you come next, we can present. First, you must present us with a report on your CEO. And what happened and why it's not here, what we expected to be here. You can proceed.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thanks to the board chairperson for the introduction. Chairperson, before Ma'am Sandeka Ngadi takes us through the operational report, I just thought to put into context the five key projects we are reporting on. And I think, Chairperson, the House knows the background to the set-top box, and that the agency, in terms of the bigger the bigger project of the country led by the DOC, that our role is around facilitating and organizing the subsidies to needy persons and households. As far as the broadband infrastructure project, Chairperson and members, you would remember that in our last presenting the business plan, that the key drivers that the agency has been targeting, and that in the agency in reformulating the way it's taking itself, that it's taking a new view of the type of project. So the public access facilities is something that the agency is continuing to work on, as well as broadband infrastructure. But we of course view our role in the broadband infrastructure project as being one cog in the bigger wheel that's being driven by the department and government generally in terms of the broadband in the country. And just to say that in terms of the infrastructure and public access project, just to reemphasize that the agency's strategy around this is that not as in the past we are just doing the infrastructure, we are seeking out smart partnerships with other arms of government and stakeholders across the three levels to ensure that these infrastructure projects are being done in a context where we will see that there's effective uptake. So we're not just looking at infrastructure for the sake of infrastructure. Our focus really is on the social appropriation and how the ICTs will be leveraged for change amongst the people in the country. And lastly, as far as the projects 4 and 5 are concerned, that the third arm of our strategic 5-year strategic corporate plan is that the agency is also positioning itself, and the 4 and 5 is indicative of this. We're positioning ourselves to as thought leaders in the space around universal service and access, and hence 4 and 5 will talk about the key projects that have been in our business plan and what has been the report and the report thereof in this first quarter. I'll hand over to Ms. Ngadi now to commence with the operational report, and we'll continue to support where we can. Thank you, Chairperson.
Good morning to all. Chairperson, I just want you to understand, because the format that the AG used is not exactly the same format that we use on our quarterly report. So I want to take you through first on how we have presented it. On the output in our quarter three report, that should be our target for the year, as per the business plan. The performance measure and indicator, the KPI, is the same as in our business plan, but the quarter one target becomes the target for what it plans to do for the quarter one, and the milestone becomes the milestone for the quarter one if you look at our project. So this is our first project, which is set-top box subsidies. This is a project that we're doing in conjunction with DOC, but our main focus is on the planning and the design. What we had planned for the year, as you see in our output, was to have 444,558 set-top boxes distributed in terms of the planning and design, and the percentage and the key indicator was the percentage of a number of poor TV households who would be subsidized. And in our target for this quarter, we are targeted to plan and design the broadcast digital migration program. What we have achieved, which is the milestone, is the establishment of partnerships with public and private sector sectors to design for the subsidies for the system. I think it's important for us to explain the key historical overview of the set-top boxes, because it was supposed to have started rolling out last year. However, due to certain factors, we were not able to do so. The PDM policy specifies the use of USAF to subsidize needy TV households, owning households, I'm sorry. Cabinet approved a subsidy level of 490 or 70% towards the cost of a set-top box per household for a total of up to 5 million needy households. This tallies to 2.5 billion in total for the USAF over a dual eliminated period. 180 million was allocated for last year, and 220 has been allocated for this year and 200 for the next financial year. USASA in its planning and design allocated 7.2 million over 3 years for capacity building for the program, and 7.4 million was spent during the last financial year, with a balance of 9.7 million to be spent during the current financial year. Basically, last year we were supposed to have distribute, according to our planning and design, we 367,000 STDs would have been distributed. However, that amount, which is 1.8 million, has been rolled over to this current financial year, as explained aside. We have also explained that the plans and implementation are still to be finalized with DOC for this project. We have, I can say, we have achieved what we had planned to do for this quarter in terms of this project. We have developed a communication strategy and plan. We've established stakeholder engagement plan. We've developed applications and verification systems and prototype subsidy coupon system, and developed means test and its pending approval. Basically, we are saying that for capacity building, for the money that we've spent, the qualification criteria completed, and but still to be gazetted. Application form for needy households has been completed. Electronic coupon development, including the system and application verification, is awaiting gazetting. Key stakeholders that we have said we've engaged and identified and engaged include retailers, SABC, SA Postal Services, and provincial governments. Mpumalanga has been selected as the province where identification of needy households is to be piloted. Chair, not because we are from that province, but because it's a province that has been ready. Really, we have trained a lot of the community development workers to commence with training with educating the public on the subsidy project. A database of needy households is in the process of that. It will be finalized by September. And STBC distributor models to be developed for the SMEs empowerment. That's our first project. The project to chair, as you said, is the broadband digital migration. We'll only focus on what we've done for the quarter since we're coming back again on Monday. Again, our output is per the annual plan. It's for underserviced areas covered with broadband infrastructure. The KPI is increase in broadband access and developed and deployed broadband infrastructure. Our target for this quarter was to gather information on requirements for implementation, consolidation of the business case, appointment of the service provider to design the work. The milestone. At least one workshop was held with key stakeholders, which was GTM, DOC, and CSIR, to gather requirements for the business case and to enable the agency to appoint a service provider. This project that we are also doing in conjunction with the key stakeholders, what we identified was Limpopo in Tzaneen municipality. The reason why we went for this, we had two areas that were earmarked. One was in the Eastern Cape. Unfortunately, because that area had not been declared an underserviced area, we could not continue with it. We went to Limpopo and Tzaneen because the municipality, they had already teamed up with Miraka CSIR, and they were ready to roll out. So we decided instead of we took all the 9 million into that project. That was our reason, because they were already ready, instead of sitting and saying that we can't proceed. But however, you must understand the budget that was allocated is 9 million, which you were going to spend at one time on the service provider once and the rolling out of the thing. So workshops, the key targets that we've achieved in this quarter, workshops were held with key stakeholders, and I said the project phase is under review as a result of the misalignment of stakeholders. This is with effect this will affect deliveries for the other quarters because we've been asked to align with the other SOEs that are also dealing with Project Digital Migration. I will not go into detail because we're going to come back on Monday to go into detail on that. On Monday. It says on Monday, yeah. Yes, Monday. Okay. Project 3, new public access facilities in underserviced area. Our output for the year was to establish 44 access centers. The KPI was increased access to sustainable public access facilities. And the quota for the first target was to establish 20 access centers. However, due to the fact that the service provider was appointed in the third quarter last year, they were not able to complete the center they established last year, so they're in the process of completing the 19 of those centers. So that's what we did for this quarter. This is one of the centers that we've established, which is here in Cape Town at Crossroads, Ulwazi. And the next project, Monitor Evaluation and Effective Use and Social Appropriation. Catch a breath of fresh air and head over to Prof. Penza to assist me with this last two projects. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Ngan. Chairperson, as indicated in the initial overview of the projects, that one of the key drivers of the strategic vision for the agency is to be a knowledge-led agency, and therefore research work is a very important one and is indicated on our business plan. One of the issues we've recognized, and especially in the context of the performance management and monitoring instituted by the presidency, is that we need to be able to more effectively report through having a proper monitoring and evaluation system in place. And to this end, Chairperson, the first phase of this is to put in place an agreed set of ICT impact indicators, and that is the key target for this project. Of course, in agreeing on indicators, it has to be broad consensus amongst stakeholders, and so for this project, that is our KPI, to find consensus on what would be the impact indicators. And the quarter one target, it was the development of measurable access and impact indicators. And the milestone for this project is to have conducted the baseline research on ICT indicators and to establish the appropriate sources of information which would then feed into such indicators. So, the project objective then is to monitor and evaluate effective use and social appropriation of ICTs, and I must underscore the issue of social appropriation, but as I pointed out, in terms of the agency's current five-year plan, that we view ourselves as seeing to the using ICTs as an enabler of social and economic development. So the particular targets overall was to initially map out where exactly there are public access around the country, to conduct an audit of all public access that includes government, private sector, community-based, etc., centers where members of the public have access to ICTs and internet, and then to develop the indicators and to implement a monitoring and evaluation tool. So for the first phase of this is to agree on what the indicators were. And what I'd like to pass on to the CEO to then report in terms of what the agency has actually been able to do in terms of the quarter one then. Thank you.
No. You say we always lost. We don't know where he is. Where is coming from?
Okay.
Coming from when you start the meeting, you said you don't know where is the CEO.
Okay.
Where is he coming from now?
I apologize. The CEO has since arrived here, but I recognize that. Thank you. I will continue.
I'm not saying you must not speak, but I'm just asking because he was not here when we started the meeting. And
okay.
When we asked, you said you don't know where the CEO. We still want the report and the course of action you are going to take against the CEO when you come back.
Chairperson, thanks. I think we've acknowledged that, and perhaps it will be prudent of the CEO to first. So perhaps the CEO should commence by explaining himself, Chairperson, before he continues.
No, it's going to waste my time. This is not the matter. How do you behave in your first year? We want a report from you when you come back. That's why I don't want him to explain anything. The fact is we started the meeting was not here, and you didn't know yourself where is your CEO. That's the fact of the matter. How you deal with in your first one, the report when you come back. Thank you.
Thank you, Prof. Pepper. Research strategy and policy is the only project where we have not really achieved what we had hoped to achieve during this quarter. And maybe I should start with the main reasons. Okay, the key output for the annually was the feasibility study on national broadband, and our KPI was universal and service strategy, which encompasses clear indication of access and funding with clear targets and indicators. The quarter one target was a feasibility study for the national broadband and to achieve 25% of universal access to broadband for the period 2011 to 2016. Milestone was different technological services and market structure that should drive universal access. As I said before, the project objective is to offer guidance regarding universal service and access to informed policy and regulatory process. Target was, as I've said, was the feasibility study, and the budget that was earmarked for this was $2.75 million. The project strategy and policy, the measurable objectives which we have not achieved was the finalization of the definitions of universal service and universal access for publication by DOC to determine exclusion of targets for broadcasting service, finalization of the definitions of underserviced areas and the list thereof by ICASA with the assistance of the agent of the DOC, appointment of a service provider to conduct a national research on broadband backbone, continuous engagement with key stakeholders that we did not manage to achieve, and we due to circumstances beyond our control, because we are not alone in this project and we need to have to work in alignment with other SOEs as well as with the DOC. On the financials, I don't know whether I want us to go through them or you can see, because it's clear how much was spent and how much was not spent, unless there's a specific question, but then, thank you.
Members, do you want them to take us through the financials, or you are okay with them? You can ask questions from them.
In 2 minutes, you can say how much you spend, how much you have spent. Not the whole thing.
Okay, in 2 minutes, can you indicate?
Okay, thanks. For the access and handover program, we did training and skills development. The budget for the quarter was $1.9 million. We spent $607,607. For the handover project, which was the handover project itself, that we spent, the budget was $275,000. We spent $211,000. Second project, broadband infrastructure. The project target of 30 new networks at $4.5 million per subsidy We didn't spend anything. That's the Broadbent Digital Migration Project. Nothing was spent. I'm sorry, that's the target, sorry, not Broadbent. That's the one where we are partnering with Limpopo and Miraka. The infrastructure program cost, which is the STB Digital Migration, we didn't spend, and there was no allocation put for that because we are not ready. We are still waiting for the standardization process. And for the rapid development deployment, we spent 2.9 million. There was 9 million allocated for this year's quarter. The 2.9 million that we spent was for the establishment of the 40 centers for this current financial year. And then we paid the audit fees. That's all. Thank you.
Member, Honorable Zondi van der Berg. Nonda.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me begin at the beginning. The first question is with regard to project number one, the top boxes. There is a designated output of almost 500,000 subsidized set-top boxes to be distributed. The question is, what is the strategy for distribution for these STPs, if any? And then on the following page, there is a figure of 2.45 billion rand, which is indicated over the dual illumination period. What is this period? It spans which year? And I was trying to add the figures of actual monies that are allocated. If I'm not mistaken, they add up to about 600 million rand. At what point are we going to reach the 2.4 billion that is indicated there? What is the dual illumination period, and at what point are we going to reach that expenditure? The following page, it talks about STP subsidies as part of BDM, and then targets 367,000 set-top boxes distributed in 2010-2011, and then indicated rollover. Has this been achieved in actual fact? Thanks, Chairperson. And also, there is also a word I don't understand on that page, use age. I know the English word usage. I'm not sure of that rather technical new word.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for the presentation. Just a general idea, Chairperson. You know, at this stage of this whole very important stage we're in the DTT programs and everything, it's very important. I've said it before in this portfolio committee that all the entities must be coordinated, working towards a certain goal. I just want to know from USASA, are they in tune, as I can call it like that, with all the other entities of the DOC? Because we have to peak all at one stage to sort of all the building blocks must be in place for the DOC and the minister to go forward. Otherwise, if USASA or CENTEC or just naming entities, if their stuff are not in place, we can't go further to the next phase. It's sort of building phase up to phase. So I just want to hear from USASA, are they up to scratch with the overall plans of the minister and the DOC, and the communication with all the other entities, are they intact with this? Because I believe this is very, very important. Otherwise, we are not going to reach our goals. I've called this a sort of a war room in the DOC to to see where are we now. I think it's very important that, for instance, USASA must be in a position, if this committee or whoever asks on a daily basis, where are we now? What has still to be done to reach this goal? I think time frames, all those things, is very important at this stage. It's very easy to say, subsidies for set-top boxes. I'm still a bit concerned identifying this household. And as you know, there's a lot of money going to change hands in this whole instance. Are USASA satisfied that they have all the financial controls, call it what you want, in place to make sure that the real needy people will receive the set-top boxes? And, if we are not on our toes with this, it's like carrying water with a bucket full of holes. When you reach 50 yards, there's no water in the bucket anymore. So I just want to know, are you absolutely sure everything will go to plan? And especially the identification. How far are you with the identification? Are you satisfied that you have identified the real people, the real needy people? And I don't think we will like the situation where at the end, fingers are pointing, yes, but this and that happened, and the needy people didn't receive what they really need. You say there on this project one, purchase of STVs as part of broadcast digital migration. This is very, very broad. Can you give us any time frames? Where are we now? What's the next step? If you can give some more information. And you also say in the milestone, established partnerships with public and private sectors. This doesn't mean anything to me. I want some more information. What type of partnerships, what's the essence of these partnerships? Also design system for subsidies. It's very vague. Please, if you can... And then on the next page, USASA allocated 17.2 million over 2 years capacity building for BDM. And give me some more information exactly what is this capacity building, what was the goal, have you reached the goal, are you satisfied that everything is settled there? And then also, you just move very quickly over one of the points. I think it was the Ulwazi. What is Ulwazi? Yeah, the Ulwazi Center. There was just a quick glimpse of the center. Will you please inform us what exactly is, if I go to the Ulwazi Center, what can I expect to do there, and the people, what services are you rendering, and those couple of things. Actually, I need more specifics on these points. Thank you, Chairperson.
Honorable Troche.
Thanks, Chairperson. My question was linked to the first person who asked the question regarding the set-top boxes, but then go to page 3, project 1. It talks about 4.48 set-top boxes being distributed, it says there. So are you saying that these set-top boxes have been distributed already, because that is talking in past tense there. So, and then that will go back to the question. How did you decide which households were needy households to receive those set-top boxes? So, yeah, it will go back to the Honourable Van der Berg's question. And then you talk about the Cabinet approved a subsidy level of 490 or 70%. How did you then decide you know, hardly to give, come to that of 490 and decide that, yes, these are the needy people and that they qualify. Okay? So if this has been distributed, I would have liked to have asked if there were disabled people included in this distribution number as well, because obviously they fall under the category of needy. So how did you decide? What was your definition that you used, or your criteria that you used to distribute these set-top boxes? Okay. How do you inform, for example, the people or those organizations for disabled people about this very project of set-top boxes? There's no page number here, but if I look at Project 5, a measurable objective, and it talks about finalizations of the definition of universal access and universal service. I've seen this now for a long time, but when are you going to be finalizing this definition? Who is supposed to be finalizing this definition? Is it you as USASA or is it DLC? It's now long on the books, and I think as long as I know this committee, this definition has been here, so I think we need to finalize this definition. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. The lady just on the last part, the one that she was on budget and what they've used on the budget, the last part that she read, it's impressive actually that they don't overspend, but also it's a bit disappointing that all the items where they are using the budget, they seem to be underspending. I don't know whether you think the difference is negligible, but I just think given the need for the services, why should you leave money behind? Why don't you just use up to the last cent? I can't understand why all the items you are understanding, something is left over, given the high need of the services.
Honourable Matthew?
Thanks, Chairperson. Chair, just a few things. The top set boxes, you can see, I said top set boxes. maybe it's a whole new world out there we don't know about. These STBs, Chairperson, there has been talk in the media about the fact that the average South African doesn't understand what the process of digital migration is. And I think it's fair to say, and this committee itself has acknowledged that it's fair to say that the advertising on what exactly digital migration is and what needs South Africans will have with regards to digital migration, unfortunately came to a bit of a standstill. Now, we're in the fortunate position to understand the concept of STVs, etc. How are we going to let the South African public understand what an STB is, why it's necessary? And more importantly, what is USASA's opinion and perhaps way forward with regards to retailers at the moment selling television sets, selling types of decoders? I mean, I was in a shop the other day where I saw a decoder that claims to be a decoder that will be able to take your TV from analog to digital. I mean, all sorts of things that we know it's an impossibility, but it's a, you know, the public is being misled in the hope that retailers are going to be making money. So is USASA aware of this, which I'm sure you are, and what is the way forward that we can stop this kind of thing happening? Also with these STBs, the manufacturer of them, what is your average costing regarding an STB? And, you know, in December 2013, when I need to go and make sure that I have everything ready, what kind of cost am I going to be in for? You know, have we looked at this long term, not only for those that are needy, but those who, like me, are in a position where I can go and buy my own STB? Chairperson, then also just, I just want to get to the page here. If you'll just give me a second. The broadband infrastructure project, does this also deal, I assume you do, but I just need confirmation, Are you dealing with ICASA on the whole unbundling of the loop with regards to broadband access? Because I think we agree that one of the biggest problems facing our country is the fact that an elite few, safe to say, has access to broadband, and we all agree that it's a major problem. And I see here that, you know, one of your outputs is under services areas covered with broadband infrastructure, and that you'll gather information, et cetera, et cetera. But the problem is, if broadband isn't universally accessible and isn't cheap, in other words, to become universally accessible, it doesn't matter how great your SASA's ideas are, financially it will be an impossibility. So I would just like to hear what SASA's opinion is regarding the current state of unbundling with regards to the loop. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. On Project 1, STB subsidy. On the progress today. Before that, Project 1, on the achievement, they said develop mid-step and spending approval. One would like to know the turnaround time with regard to that. Then the next page is saying qualified criteria completed, still to be gazetted. The warning factor, I think you need to come with specific story. It's about the turnaround time again. On Mpumalanga selected as a province, I'm concerned on the training of the CDW to commence when. And then also we are now towards the end of September with regard to the database. Is it almost to completion? Because now already, though I'm wonderful, we would support it in the second quarter. The same thing, STB model to be developed when. Then moving to the following project number 2, broadband infrastructure on targets there. We are told the project concept phase is under review as a result of misalignment. Who was responsible for the misalignment? And at your planning phase, when you submitted your strategy, didn't you foresee this happening? And then also, it's under review. For how long is it going to take? On Project 3, new public access facilities, your target was 20 access centers, and then it means you didn't achieve anything on this one. We are told project is being reviewed. What is review, Rowan? What does that mean? Because you said your target, and then the only report is saying project is being reviewed. Who decides that after you have adopted a strategic plan and then you only come with this? The last one, Chairperson, is on Project 4. Monitor and evaluate effective use of social appropriation. Target, place list of agreed upon ICT usage indicators. And then there's nothing on achievement. Thank you.
Honorable Davin.
Apologies for the delay. Thank you, Chair. If I can just comment first with the presentation. We always urge people when they're coming to present to help us number the document so that you are able to say your slide number 5. This presentation, I only found the slide number 4 and I'm trying to go through. But then those are the things that must be corrected. Before I get into anything, Chairperson, Honorable Nikki, on the other side, my colleague, raised an issue with regards to the center, Ulwazi, that the USASA must explain what is it that he can expect if he goes there. I must tell the person, if we don't visit these centers when we are doing oversight, we'll come and ask that question. That is why it is important that when you do oversight, everybody is there. You see what is it that USASA is spending on.
and what is expected of the centre, so that we are able to tell them that their centres are not assisting or they are not well equipped. On page 18, coming to the report, page 18 of the detailed report, not the presentation that you made. I hope I didn't mess up page 18. You talk of, on your quarterly target, you list that you have an annual operation plan with key strategic objectives for internal audit, and I see you have not achieved there. My question or concern is, how does your internal audit function now if they don't have an operational plan that has these key strategic objectives, as you are saying? Because I understand it's in every division that exists in a department or organization is supposed to be guided by a clear plan, so that you don't find yourselves doing things that you have not planned for. If you did plan for this, that this April to June, this is what you're going to do, and then you haven't done it, and on your reasons or comments, your remedial actions, you are telling us that you're still waiting for the finalization of the risk management document. Was it somebody else that did the plan for you? If you did it, how come you couldn't pick it up, that we can't do the same, or we can't reach the same targets at the same time? The other one follows the other, if it's like that. Or who did not perform? On page 23, it's a follow-up to what Honorable Mutambi has raised with regard to the 20 access centers. I see you even proud to tell us that you had a backlog, and I'm sure you got performance bonuses. I don't understand if those two go together, but anyway, I see on your review, okay, you want to review the project MOUs. Is it because there's a specific reason that led to those people who were supposed to deliver on what was supposed to be delivered with regard to USASA and the service provider? They did not adhere to whatever, or is it because you have a change of heart that now what you said you must do, now we think you can do it this way? That's it for now, sir. Thank you.
You suffer?
I'll
hand it over to my colleagues to respond. Nanfuni caucus in most of the Nipume Abanyaba present in the Wuyanan Kati.
Can I start with the two questions that pertain to rapid projects, and also I'll deal with the one for the operational plan for internal audit. What internal audit is actually saying on that operational plan, we have an operational plan, but for them, they needed to have the risk assessment done. By now, it's there, it's completed, but it was not completed during the first quarter because that was the time when we outsourced. We got a service provider to come and help assist us do the risk assessment and do the risk strategy and the plan. So now that it's there in place, it is. We are actually there operating. But for their section, they could not because they needed to. Their strategy needs to be aligned with our risk assessment. So that is the reason they have that. Okay, on RAPID. The reason for RAPID, why we are currently saying we want to review it, and why we did. The service provider, I think I explained in my presentation that was not able to finish because it was only appointed in the third quarter. And for last financial year, they were supposed to do 36, but they managed to do 23, which I think for the time period that we gave them was quite commendable. And they're completing the last one, so this quarter they should be done. But why we are saying we are reviewing it? We're reviewing it because we want to see, we have already received other strategies on how to do it from the stakeholders that we deal with. We also want to review in terms of the budget. Is it still sufficient for the per center? And also from the interactions that we've had during the portfolio committee visits, the points that was raised in terms of how much more we need to do, we also, that's why the review needs to be done. We're going back to look at those things to say, is this okay? So that we can, for the 19.8 million that we've allocated for this financial year, we want to be sure that if we get maximum benefit out of it, we want to be absolutely sure. We don't want to come back here end of the year and say to you, we didn't spend that 19 million because we had this teething projects. Remember, it's the first time that we're doing it in this format now. So this is why we are actually doing the review. Thanks. My colleagues can take another question.
Okay, follow up.
Lieutenant, if upon your review you find out that you're going to need extra budget, did you take care of that in your budget that you presented to Parliament?
Thank you, the Honourable Member. Our purpose of review is not to add budget, but to get maximum value for the 19.8 million that we've been given. Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, Honourable Member.
We don't sound like the people who are on what we are doing, the way we are doing. Anyway, continue.
Thank you for the questions. And just to reemphasize the point around the public access center models, because I think just to say to the House is the issue of public access models internationally has been something that has had various degrees of success. And from our perspective, the agency is continually monitoring how what we're implementing. So it's almost as if we're evaluating it, you know, on the ground all of the time, and so hence the review, and as we've indicated, to try and get maximum value out of the budget so that we can reach more people across the country. Just to correct the grammar regarding set-top boxes, although it says X number of boxes distributed, because that's taken out of, that is the KPI, assuming that we would have distributed, I think honourable members would know that we didn't come to that point last year, and therefore, you know, that was a rollover. So no set of boxes have been distributed. The figure of 2.4 billion is a projected figure in terms of our calculation of the estimated number of needy households and how much we would actually need. What's indicated there in terms of the actual allocations of the 180 million rand, 220 and 200. Is what has been already appropriated for subsidization. So I think the point is that 2.45 is what is anticipated as being the total amount needed if we will subsidize at approximately 490 rand, so that there will be a shortfall. So 2.5 has not been actually allocated. It's only the 180, which is now will be rolled over for now, 220 and the 200. Regarding the I think the Honourable Member is right regarding how this agency dovetails, because there are a number of elements in respect of the whole digital migration plans, and as far as the agency is concerned, our role is around that of subsidization. So the agency is mindful of that, and therefore you'll also see that in our slide, we've indicated in our last bullet that yes, all of our plans are subject to the finalization and ratification within the bigger context of the DOC's Digital Migration Office. However, what the agency has done in the first quarter is that it expended its energy and resources towards going the first stage of putting those plans in place, and that included developing a means test, which we would still finalize with the stakeholders at the level of the DOC's Digital Migration Office, and how to go about identifying needy people. For example, we've developed an application form regarding the application form and the broad processes that would have to be followed. Regarding the actual subsidization issue, there were two models that the agency examined, that being the retailer and the manufacturing model, and the proposed model that the agency is proposing is that of the retailer model, where the subsidization is happening at the level of the consumer. But Chairperson and members of the House, I think the point I'd like to underscore is that we've just come through the first quarter, we've come through the phase of doing this work. We still have to take it to the process of ratifying and agreeing with the stakeholders at the level of the department. Regarding the question around what was the 17.2 for capacity building, that money was appropriated so that the agency can begin to put in place and undertake work to ready itself for subsidization. And hence, like the work we've undertaken in the first quarter, speaks to readying ourselves to be able to oversee and facilitate the subsidization. So that takes into, for example, working out the mechanisms by which needy households would be identified, the development of software initially in which we would in which a database would be used to manage all of the data. With regards to the question of costings, Chairperson, I think the agency is not in a position to give because we don't have oversight or a role in the actual manufacturing processes of this. At the end of the day, I think the agency would be deploying its resources and efforts as far as subsidization is taking place. And so I think we don't, as an agency, in terms of where our mandate and where our role is, have a direct influence of what that set-top box would eventually cost. Okay, I just then want to respond then to the question of the definitions. Yes, that as USASA, we aren't in a position to gazette. You would remember that in February last year, there was an initial gazetting of definitions. We were then advised that there was a technical problem with a wording there, and the previous minister had to withdraw that gazette to correct it. And so now that it's been corrected, that yes, it's been dragging on for too long. So that gazette on definitions needs to be reinstituted as soon as possible. But however, around the gazetting of proclamation of definitions of underserved areas, etc., we are then working with ICASA to make sure that those that's brought to finality, and I hope that the next time the agency comes to report here, that we'll be able to give you some progress on bringing those to finality. Chairperson, I'd hand over to the my colleague, the CEO of the agency, to continue with providing responses.
Thank you, and thank you to members for the opportunity. I know that we'll be responding on the late coming, but let me just register my apology for working late into the chambers. It was not intended. I got to tell you that in the letters for the first time that it has happened, and that certainly do not happen again. In relation to some of the questions on set-top boxes, I think the board member has really elaborated a lot on the set-top boxes. We are but one part of the whole value chain. Our mandate has been put down for the subsidy disbursement, and to that effect, we have been, USAF has been earmarked as such. But when the decision to have the needy households done, it was contained in a policy directive that was presented before cabinet, and it came out that we must do 5 million households, as at the time the data indicated that there's 5 million households requiring assistance. With the job market having gone up and unemployment rate having gone up, it might mean that even households have actually increased. So we might be chasing a moving target, and that's for us the issue that must be considered moving forward. As to the amount of money at the time, the box was priced at 700, or estimated to be priced at 700. And the decision that we had to work from was that there must be 70% subsidy to needy households. And that means we have 490. And the allocation that we got from Treasury then was about 400 million for the 2 to 3 years, starting from 2008. Then we were given 180 to start off with, which when you look the 490 then gave you about 367,000 households to be the first ones. And then it will then follow that the other households will do to that. We have registered in a number of forums the inadequacy of the amount not tallying up to 245 billion as indicated. So that's a continued discussion. But I'm sure everyone else is aware that we had all worked from a dual elimination period of 2008 where Centec would then for 2 years run it, and then from there we then have feeder migration food implemented, and now it has moved, I think, to 2013. So we have to be dynamic to that particular factor, that the project and the process is big and must be communicated. And we do share that we have raised this as well with the DOC. And in our last discussions, we would then tighten up, I think, our relations, because we come from one end of the subsidy, then they come from another angle of infrastructure. We have dealings now with the post office so that we can then tap into their assistance as another SOB. We have been in discussions with SABC and look at our database as to where they can be able to assist us on it. So what we have readied ourselves and will still need to take for discussion, even to be presented to this House, would be the instruments that are required for us to respond to the disbursement. The first question is, if we do the retailer model, that what we got from the policy of the retailer model is to pay the retailers against a coupon that a particular household will have, and they can redeem it. And there's a lot of things that you must consider in the back office, how the system might be able not to be fraudulently be taken up and double dipping or double accounting for people. So that means that if we test it out in Mpumalanga, the sense that we want to have is, if we use community development workers to gather data from the what system if we're to use it using the anti database, because there's no consistent data that we can find. If you go to SASA, they're doing individuals. They're not doing households. It's about an individual. So if you count an individual, you'll count the household three or four times. If you go to indigenous policy as well, you find that the data is not as stable as the last time it was updated. So your challenge is just, when was the last time that it was updated on? And also, if you use, at least if you use the live CW person going through, we can be able to start maybe stabilizing it. So then we can correlate the system. So it's going to be a massive type of exercise to deal with, because if you were to use what was initially thought, would use SABC's licenses, they are not as stable as well, because Nicky van der Werf might be buying for his mother in Pofara, then from there Nicky, then the mother does not have a license, then you have a problem, because Nicky does not qualify for it, but he is the one with the license. So those are the dynamics that you've done. So what we've been dealing with is to talk to stakeholders, and always we talk to stakeholders is to make them alive to the problems that we might face if we do this, subsidy disbursement. As SABC has been spoken to, as we do, the retailers as well, they have a certain rule that they want to be dealing with this particular coupon system. And we are alive to the fact that if we're to say how long will it take for us to pay if somebody puts up a coupon before them? Is it 72 hours, 8 hours, 24 hours? Those things have a bearing in terms of how they can support us moving forward. So there's a lot of it, and I think I'm happy to hear that we might have another session to deal with this issue of set-top boxes in detail with all our stakeholders. Perhaps some of the discussions we do is this draft that you're working with, having gone through the governance structures, be shared as a draft, so that we can all maybe start to look at the same issues and raise all the concerns and the risks possible. But the coordination of it is from where we are sitting, coming from the department, and they've made very great moves to start coordinating it. Despite that, as long as it's no longer there, they've made great moves to start coordinating it. And we are really quite happy that we've had discussions with Treasury as well, just to bring them to speed of where we are.
I just allow you to do that, but it's not what you are here for.
Sure.
Can we go back to the what we are here for and deal with those? We are moving out of that. Digital migration is next week in detail. We are not there for today. You are raising your hand? Oh, okay. Can we go to the other question?
Certainly, Chair. We really thank you for indulging. I think I had a lot of questions around STB, so maybe that's why I took the liberty, but I really do take the point that we'll have more detailed discussion coming through. On issues that were raised, and I might not have registered them all in my notes, is
which one do you need? I'll remind you.
We've dealt with the FTB one from a point.
Issue about your opinion about the gadgets which have been sold in retail, which report that is the solution to the issue of the set-top box raised by Honorable Michael. That one is not yet responded. That what is your opinion around that? And how do you want to move forward around that particular matter?
I don't think we have a particular position about any box that might be there, because what it is, if there is a set-top box, it has to deal with, we are dealing with a portion if we're to respond to needed households. There's nothing that stops commercial movements of boxes if there is such a move.
What is your understanding of local loop unbundling? Will that be a solution to the universal service access for broadband?
Chairperson, if I could a response just that to the last question. The issue around LLU is that is that it will unbundle what is largely the copper network in the country. But if we go back, we would also know that we were not very successful in getting that network extended into the areas where it matters. And if we look at it in the context of extending broadband access to needy persons and especially rural areas, then LLU would have a marginal effect on that. So therefore, local loop unbundling is but one part of the bigger picture of ensuring we get access to all people of South Africa. And especially as far as rural areas are concerned, I would think it will have minimal impact, and we need to have other more innovative solutions with regards to how we reach out to them. So, for example, our plan for this in this financial year from the agency, for example, in partnership with Mazaka, like on the issue of wireless mesh networks and how that is used to extend broadband to people in remote areas, is but one example of other innovative means that we need to come up with in partnership with government and the big operators, smaller operators, etc., to see to that. So the short answer then, Chair, is LLU will have a marginal effect only. Thank you.
Okay. There was also the question of why we chose Mpumalanga. The reason we have offices that are established, and we're still establishing offices in other provinces. Currently, we have established offices in the Western Cape, Free State, KZN, Limpopo, Eastern Cape, and Mpumalanga. We're in the process, and we should have completed it by the next quarter, of establishing offices in the Northern Cape and the Northwest. Why we chose Mpumalanga? Mpumalanga was ready to the extent that they even invited our chairperson and our project team to come and present to the whole cabinet. That was in June, July. So the cabinet is also aware and has actually commissioned the training of the CWs. That's why we went for Mpumalanga. We also always look at proportioning things within the provinces. For instance, we launched in KZN, at Impendre, and here at Western Cape we've launched the Ulwazi Center. So we try to proportion things and not focus on one area. And we've done a lot of work as well in the Free State. So Mpumalanga, the only reason was that they were ready and the cabinet was welcomed us. They also invited the board, the chairperson, to come and present and explain exactly how this FCB is going to be rolled out and what are the processes. Thank you.
The problem is that other things are happening in KZN where the minister's from. Now it's Mpumalanga where the chairperson is from. Then it becomes a problem. Maybe that's the issue. Follow up, Honorable Ndabe.
Okay, on that note, yeah, I would like to know what's happening in the Eastern Cape. All right, okay, now that's on a lighter note. A follow up to this response, chairperson. Usistandega is informing us that the cabinet welcomes them. What I would like to know, are all provinces on board with this project that you, or this program that you are enrolling? Secondly, did you get buy-in from them, the different provinces that you are working with, if you are working with all of them? Thirdly, you talk of the training for the CDWs that you're going to utilize. Do you train all CDWs, or you've taken a specific number? If it's a specific number, what informed that number, and what is the criteria for you that you used to come up with Stella and whoever that is part of the 20 numbers? Thank you, then. And are all provinces on board with the usage or utilization of their CDWs with the in the program? Thank you.
you must also respond to the question of misalignment. When did you identify or known about the misalignment? After it was presented to us, then later it was discovered misalignment. What exactly? Which is under review? There was that question which has not been responded to.
Okay, let me just start with the last one so that I could. The misalignment, I think, it is just to this particular point. When we conceived the project of the Limpopo area, we had already identified Emalahleni and Giyani. Now, when the municipality of Tzaneen had a budget of their own and CSIR was on board to try the wireless mesh, we then joined them up, and that's why we did that workshop. So misalignment comes in when we would want to then align ourselves with other SOEs in the province. We then told there is a move to do a broadband infrastructure rollout, and they have identified institutions like Centec. And then in that discussion with the department is to look at what the Centec can do for us to then align so that we can have a clearer budget that could be augmented and deal with it. So the misalignment is just to say where we were sitting with CSIR, that is not in line with what the province has started on broadband, and we had to get them on board. And from there, it is whether we could start with the area where CSIR and ourselves are with, and then align our energy so that the 9 million, the 5 million, plus any other money that we do for backhaul could then be used within the infrastructure. And also, if Infraco around it has something that we do, that's what we wanted to just to get alignment clear. So that's our last discussion with the misalignment.
So in short, you have presented a plan to us without engaging or having a broad, without a broader view on what you want to do. Only realized later that no, we can't do it because I just want to understand how did you present a plan and then later you know you only discover that you have to realign. What? How did you finalize the plan? You didn't engage first or you didn't have the broader view what you want to do. It only came late when you engaged on the realignment. Because I think that's what we're dealing with exactly. How do you plan? Do you plan in your corner and finalize then at the implementation stage is when you realize that no, it can't work, you need other stakeholders. I think that's where the issue is. Because you still have the other contacts which are coming.
I think if you go back, and maybe just start with this one, I'll go back to where the problem might have been. The budget that we'd have had would have done just access network in a smaller scale in that particular municipality. Now, if the province itself wants to do a much more bigger program of backhaul facilities that have been there and backbone infrastructure, then we bring more onto it. It will then mean if we have to scale the little that we have with the municipality just in that small access center in that area. So misalignment will be that now you are missing on the bigger picture that the province itself wants to push for it. And if you go back to where our baseline was, it was that we had said in our baseline that areas will be given 4.5 million. That was even preceding the board members here, that was the baseline it was given. So you will find,
what you're explaining, we're not responding.
Sure.
Whether the small scale, the baseline, but have you done that in your little corner without the broader picture? Because I would assume that before you reach into that, you should know that there might be these things which will happen. That's what I'm trying to get at. Because we are talking about things then started to happen. What does that mean? It means your plan, you finalize your plan without the broader view of what is going to happen and so on. And then you realize later that, by the way, you would have a small niche which you can have impact, they have showing the others and so on. That's what I'm dealing with. How do you plan? Are you planning on your own, or you engage everyone, then you come with a plan which is comprehensive and so on? That's the key, the crux of the question. Honorable Ndabeni, want to follow?
Just to add, because I can't let my chairperson just go along there. Just to add on that, chairperson, it goes back to whether USASA does embark on situational analysis when they're going to enroll their programs, or they just parachute themselves to the municipalities that exist in the provinces. Because if they're going to do their plan and they know that they are going to have to implement their plan in the municipalities or in the provinces, the first step to take is to go to the provincial government, whoever that is responsible, try to find out what is happening in the province. Where can we assist, or where can we do whatever that we need to do? And then they go to the municipality, because even those municipalities have their IEDPs in place. This program that you want to enroll, how do you integrate it to the plan that already is there and budgeted for by the municipality, so that you don't have a program that is launched by USASA and then it cannot be sustained because it did not form part of the IEDP? So it's a question just that, did you do your situational analysis before you enroll in your project? Thank you, Chair.
Follow up.
Thank you, Chair. Whatever the answer might be, because you see, the reason why I raised this, I'm worried about the statement to say, as a result of this misalignment, this will affect deliverables for the other quarters. And then they've also said that the budget of 9 million has not been spent based on that. So whatever the answer will be, I think they should ask, tell us how do they intend to move forward.
I'm sure you get what we're dealing with. The fact of the matter, what we're trying to deal with, it doesn't matter what to explain. The more you explain, you're not going to give us the answer. The answer is what we ask when you present a strategic plan, that does you understand the environment they're operating in? Before you come with a plan, can you do an analysis that this is the environment where we need to make an impact? And what impact do you want to make in that environment? So the issue now, it comes that your plan didn't follow the first situational analysis first and then say what you want to do, because it's at that point where you get this other thing which you need to come up with. So I think the issue is that we have to note the question we are raising, but the problem is what the member is raising, that you are saying yourself it's going to have an impact on the other quarter. So that's where the problem is. And if it's going to have an impact on the other quarters, then you need to first come with a solution, because we cannot allow a situation where it's going to have an impact throughout and so on with the other quarters. That's the issue. So there's no response we'll give which will make us understand. We don't understand what they're talking about. Or we can understand that you should have done it at the beginning, then you understand. So whatever you explain might not help, except that you have to note and go and do the situational analysis or an environment where you're operating, so that whatever you do can be able to respond to that. But you can try if you want to, or you go to the other question.
I think, Charles, I'm going first to acknowledge what members are saying, and also really to actually say that this is the very reason that our plans were parachuted. USASA, in its operation, parachuted itself in many an instance without the stakeholders in that particular. That's a fact. Because if you look at all our historical programs, some of the reason they never sustained is because of that. And that's why when we started in a financial year, we started with engagement with all the provinces presenting their plans. And it's work in progress, but when we pronounce ourselves for the next cycle of MTL, we would want to then be able to have dealt with it. So you will then find a particular difference. It is true that previously it was the point, but we take note of the issues that have been raised and will appropriately deal with them.
Chairperson, just to extend what the CEO is saying, I think the issue, and I think the questions are very pertinent. And if we want to, as an agency, make inroads into the divide, that these are serious things. But I think what I'd like, Chairperson, for you and the members to take cognizance of the difficulties of the agency. There are a number of, because in an ideal situation, we would have in the country a properly audited situation where we understand the exact gaps, where they are per GPS coordinate that they exist. That mapped against the average LSMs per community, so we know where they exist. That we'd have a system of prioritization so that we can begin to tackle that. And I think we have to acknowledge the agency is but one cog in the bigger picture of how government is rolling out its broadband strategy. So in the absence of that, and as you can see from some of our projects that are on the table this year, we are endeavoring to get to that point, the access, the indicators, the GIS mapping, etc., that we believe that the department is driving the strategy for broadband nationally, that we will fit into that. We take cognizance of this. For this year, as the CEO has indicated, at the very least, we call all the provinces. We called the municipalities, and people who had ICT plans came and made presentations to us. Based on those plans, We collected further information to verify. And so the very least, in terms of situational analysis, that's what we were able, that's what we were able to do. But I think the points are well taken. From the board, just to add, the directive was that we only, those things that we put into a business plan, our directive from the board to the CEO and his team was that we will only support and put things into the business plan where there is a clear program of action from provinces, that provinces have an ICT broadband-related project in the context of some uptake and development for the people of that province, or alternatively, that's the province. And I think we specifically said, that's the municipality. If a municipality has a project, ICT-related, that's part of their IDP, we'd be willing to do that. So, unfortunately, I think the extent of consultation wasn't as broad, but I think we're very mindful of that, and we will be, you know, doing it better going forward.
Thanks very much, Yusuf. I'm sure there are other questions which are left, but I take your point. That's why we are raising the point, because we don't know what's the basis of your operation if you don't have a national indication in terms of what you want to do. So I will take that. We must just take note that you might miss most of your project based on some of those things. It's highly possible that most of your project will miss them because you don't have the fundamental plan and so on. And Tom, do you want to follow up for that with you?
Yeah, it's on the new public access facility and under-service area. You see, when you look at the target, they were going to establish 20, and they had 19 outstanding. Then I raised the question to say that the project is being reviewed, and I wanted to understand what is the review about it. Because, you see, I've got concern to say if we had carried over the 19 from the previous financial year, why were they not completed? And then, is it the same service provider you're utilizing from the first one, from the previous one? So surely it didn't also give us a status quo update on the 44 as a whole. And then I think that's a serious area of concern for us. And now you're telling us about the review. What is this review all about?
Yeah, can you respond quick that you just missed your penalty?
I think I did respond. I did explain that the review, we are reviewing to ensure that now when we deploy the 44 centers, the 19.88 million that's earmarked for this year, we are going to ensure that we get maximum utilization. That I did explain. And I also explained that the 44 we have not achieved because, and why we're still completing the 19, the service provider was appointed at the third quarter last year. And so during the third and the fourth quarter, they managed to do 23, which I personally think is an achievement given the time that we've given to them. Considerably, that's how I explained it earlier. I don't know, maybe somebody else wants to ask.
You appointed a service provider on the third quarter? And there is in the third quarter, how many whatever that they were supposed to deliver on? And when?
I said earlier that it's the 36. There were 36 for the prisoner for the financial year, and they've completed 20. I mean, sorry, 23. And currently in this quarter, they're working on the completing of the established 19 that they've already established.
Okay. You are saying fairly they have delivered, and you expected them to deliver 36 last year and have not delivered on that. They delivered 23, but you believe that at least they have done good out of that. You continue to say this year you're giving them, you're adding a number or whatever that they're going to continue to with regards to your 19 million and all that, but they have not finished. They have not reached the target that they were supposed to reach last year. But you don't see any discomfort in that?
My apologies, Chair. We do. We totally do. Absolutely do see the problem in that. And the money that they've been given for this year is to establish further centers. What we have also noticed in this process, it's taking longer to get the centers the identification of the centers, because they identify the centers through external services. They go to municipalities, they go to tribal authority. So therefore, it has taken longer. In the plan that were given, they were going to take about 2 to 3 weeks, but it has turned out to be 3 months. The reality. Remember, this is the first time that we're going through this project in this manner. So this is why we are now saying we need to review, because we have seen that most of what was given to us, what we planned, is not actually working as per the plan. Hence the importance of reviewing to ensure that when we embark on this 40 that we're earmarking to do this year, we not only complete them, but we try and do more in terms of the 19.58 million that we've been given.
It won't help you, because on the document I'm having, you have 44, and then first quarter is supposed to do 20. You got only one done, 19 are still outstanding. Now that's where the issue is. Now the issue, you are not saying part of the problem is that, because I could see that part of the, how many service providers are using to start with? Because if you are using one, maybe that's why you're having a problem, but how many of them are you using? Because so the reviewer, I'm not sure that the reviewer will include having more service providers to do their work. Because you see, the issue is that don't tell us a story which is not complete. That's the problem. And the more you tell us a story which is incomplete, the more you probe for questioning and the more the time is running. So tell us a complete story. You've got how many, because 1 out of 20, really. And we're talking about rural areas, the one which we are focusing at and so on. It becomes something else and so on. So maybe that's why the question I keep on coming. You are having one service provider. It does not seem to deliver. Obviously, if they say 3 weeks, then they take 3 months. The next question is that, what was the service agreement with them? What have you done? There any penalties? What have you done exactly about that? The answer might be nothing. So if there's nothing which you have done about people who say 3 weeks, then they deliver in 3 months at the expense of the service delivered for the poor people, it's something else. Because that's the question we ask. What measures have you taken when they say 3 weeks and then they deliver it in 3 months? What measures have you taken against that service provider? Because clearly, they didn't deliver what they said they would deliver. What measures have you taken? Ask you, sir, can you tell us that? Maybe let us start there. 3 weeks, da 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 da, and so on.
How much have you paid them?
Okay. The measures that have been taken is exactly what we stated there, that we're reviewing the MOU with them, we're sitting down with them. And through it's one service provider, and part of the review will include us extending to other service providers. As Prof. Pepper explained earlier, we even look at international models. We're just not looking at the one model that they've given us. And that will entail answering the question of how long it would take to plan and to establish and to get the centers. That review will include all of that. We're trying by all means to see to it that the mistakes that have happened do not reoccur. What has been paid so far, they've been paid, I think, 15 million.
It is 6 that they were supposed to deliver, and they delivered 23.
The budget was 16 million.
So what do you use? What method do you use to pay people that are supposed to deliver 36? They deliver 23, and then you give them 15 million out of 16 million.
The project was taken from the project that is a subsidy project, because it has as well people that will deal with it. I think for members, perhaps what we did do for this quarter was to align that we have not achieved this, but the measures we thought we'll then talk about it in the second quarter, the remedial actions that we've taken, and the points that we have said, the review and what it will then entail. If for indulgence, we could be able to provide a particular sense of where we are at and how we dealt with it for the second quarter, if that's allowable. But to come to the point, the subsidy portion was that you will have a center established, you then advance the subsidy view of which is in tranches of over 3 hours. That's how we meet the 15 million. That they will then build up the center, they'll procure the sites, they'll procure the equipment, and then deploy them. So what we are dealing with is the delay in doing them, same, because in procurement processes and the sites, they've shown us that they've done the sites. a question of delay in delivery and putting those things in those computers. So that's where we are at. And as well as we have not extended the contract, which is what we're holding up for the next phase. This is the review product that Dr. Gearbox. To say you failed to do this in the last quarter, I mean the last year, last financial year, we'll then have to then review and then see whether we still continue with them now, amongst all the players that you've consulted. So I'm sure in the second quarter we'll come in with more portions of how we've dealt with this whole matter.
No. You see, the problem you are not helping. On the report, you are saying this will have an impact, even on the second quarter and so on. I think that's why I was saying originally, maybe it's how this thing has been handled and so on, because your response also is triggering question. I can see many hands are coming up after you have responded. It means you are just triggering more questions. Because the issue is that on a budget of 16 million, already you have paid 15 million. And there's been no delivery or movement on this issue. If it's true, that's what the numbers which have been thrown around. 16 million, you have paid 15 million, the person has not delivered, you are reviewing the MOU and other things and so on. But what I was asking is that when a service provider meets a deadline, what becomes your recourse as you pass? That's the issue we're asking. And are you enforcing your recourse if people meet deadline? That's the issue, because you said 3 weeks, then a person takes 3 months. What becomes your recourse in terms of your MOU or your service level agreement which you have with them? Well, that's the issue which is highly making the public service, especially entities, not to perform, because you seem to be helpless in terms of dealing with your service provider you appoint. You appoint them with a blank check. They can do whatever, it doesn't matter. Whether people, they meet deadline, it doesn't matter. As long as they will meet them every 3 years down the line instead of a year, it's fine, they've done it and so on. So, everything can happen at any time, it's fine. So, that's what we're dealing with. What has been your recourse on this one, which has failed to deliver in 3 weeks and takes 3 months? What have you done? What was your recourse in terms of that? That's what we're asking. What is your responsibility? You enter with a service level agreement. If they don't deliver into it, what is your recourse? Did they pay any penalty? Or what has happened about that? Or is it just normal business as usual?
The agreement we have them, there are penalty clauses in it. The point that you've given them, it was a point that they must make good on the outstanding side that we have to deliver before the close of the quarter that you are in. That we must have those sites ready and up and doing. Then you go inspect and have a sign off on it. For moving forward, there's no money that has been expanded to them. That's why in the quarter we never spend any cent with them, because we didn't want to then take that particular point. As well as to say, if that's not the point, the contract, it is that the contract is not going to be renewed, because we are reviewing to the extended. We might not even continue with the same service provider, or if we do, it will only lesser responsibilities, because that's where the challenge was. There's a new model, everyone has to deal with it. But the sites are there, the sites, they've started on them. It is a question that they are not in a way that we must sign off an AG, an audit, guys go there. They must find everything complete according to spec. So that's the penalty. We have penalty that you do that, and also every other cost is to
pay. At what expense are you moving up and down to do that? At what expense? Where does that man come from? For you to move up and down and check things which people are supposed to do it from the first instance. At what expense? Do you suffer expense? Or at their expense? Who's paying that move, that up and down?
Can I take the point that it is, if that's the model that I was asking, that if we took up and then it will be at Jesus' expense, obviously. But if it is that from the point that I'm hearing the chair and me members are sharing, would be that that should be born as a penalty clause embedded in it. And that's something that we'll definitely take a look at.
I get that. Yeah, now getting into the details. It's interesting how you respond to the questions. You make us to have many more very interesting questions. Because it comes back to the question of the capacity of those that we give jobs or whatever. You are saying, CEO, it's a new model. I agree. But as you started, you knew it's a new model. The service providers that you called for, you gave them specification of what is it that you expect. And my understanding is that then you said you are the best qualifying service provider. Therefore, we're giving you an opportunity to do the same. The same people that you had confidence in them
they do not deliver according to your expectation. But still, you pay in tranches up to 15 million, which means out of the 13 they have not delivered on, it's only 1 million. If they were to say, we are giving up, there's nothing we can do, we don't have the capacity, please get someone else to continue with the job. What do we do if you didn't even have that as a penalty clause in the service level agreement or MOU, whatever thing that you signed with them? Thanks.
Before you respond, members, any other follow-up questions so that they can respond and then we go?
I think the rest of recourse we'll have is to the common law part of recourse against the non-performing. That's what we'll then institute in a particular instance. And there are other clauses that we'll have to look at. I think what we operated from was to push as much as to say to let's focus on doing what is outstanding now and to the satisfaction that we're looking at. And I do take the point that it might be a delay and it should not be acceptable to anyone to say that you are behind schedule by another 3 months and now costing us in a quarter to develop. And that's the response that we would want to give.
Thanks very much. I hope we are not asking any additional funds on the campus because clearly we have no capacity to spend. And if you are asking any additional funds for anything, we are not going to agree on that. We have not demonstrated, as you saw, that we've got the capacity and the ability to spend money. If you look on the budget we have presented here, clearly we still have to do a lot of things before we can think about additional funding. So that's my assumption, because if anything will come through the MTEF processes and that you need more money, I don't think we'll be at it unless maybe something can happen. But really, looking at the expenditure on the report presented, we don't seem to have that capacity to spend. But thanks very much for your report. It's very interesting. It's an eye-opener. And more information, I'm sure we are able to understand probably the environment they're operating at. We will require the second quarter report in written form to come to the committee. We might not come call you to come before the committee, but we want the second quarter report in written to the committee so that we are able to track how far do you proceed. Upon a need, maybe on the second quarterly report, not everyone can be called. It will depend on how do you perform, move forward, and we might be able to call you and so on. Honorable Ndabeni, want to say something?
I went to the law. I'm not sure if the question was asked or what. I see on the list of stakeholders or the corporate governance, but under the deeds that you listed, on the 12th and 13th, the Minister of Communications launched the Umsinga project. I haven't seen it in the presentation. You didn't make mention of it. And I believe you have spent on that. But my question is, what lessons have you drawn out of the Umsinga project? Now that we're talking about the issue of the service provider that has failed to do something, did this one that you appoint qualify according to ICASA regulations? That means licensing and all that. Lastly, if we can get the status on it, how far is it? How is it going? What do we need to change when we are going to other provinces and all that? Thanks, sir.
Whoever is next must come forward. You can respond to this.
This was a previous planning, so we thought when we report on seeing or to be when we would do the annual report, that's the time that we thought to report on it. But the event of having seen it, then it was done now to have it on board. In terms of the licensee that was done, it is in according to ICASA license requirements. And to date, what we have is that the network that they put up some base stations around in Umsinga. The lessons we learned, like any other thing that in absence we said, the model of ICASA previously was to parachute itself in actually doing something else. So what the lessons we've learned is key is stakeholder information gathering, which we've done, by the province and as well as the provincial management. Thirdly, all anchor tenants that you want to talk to in the area must be present in a particular space. The fourth portion will then be that
there is a greater need for bigger budget to then cost the center. Before you then say a center should be 4.5 or 9 million, there must be a costing. And that's what our point has been. Until you declare under service areas, you cost them correctly, you have a sense of which portion you want to subsidize, we also will not be able to respond well in terms of under service areas. And we're going to have this type of situation.
Thank you very much, USASA. We hope the second quarter will improve.
We hope the DOC is going to assist USASA so that when they come here with clear reports. This thing of us having to go down and to detail with reports, whereas DOC's competence is costing us. DOC, please, pull up your socks. Thank you.
Welcome, Chairperson, Acting Chairperson of MDDA, and your delegation, your CEO, and other executives who are here. The stage is yours.
Good morning, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. First, may I please apologize for the other board members. There were going to be five of us today, but upon change of date, unfortunately, other board members, including the chair of the board, could not change their prior commitments at their respective workplaces at short notice. So we'd like to register that apology. Having done that, I would like to introduce with me on my immediate left is Nebo Lekwabe, who is a board member, and I myself am Pumelelo Nzimande, a member of the board, standing in for Gugum Sibi, the chair of the board. On my immediate right is Lumko Mthimde, the CEO, whom you know very well as the committee. On the extreme left next to Nebo is Mshiyeni Gungqisa, our CFO. And next to the CEO is Nkopane Maphiri, Project Director. We also have with us Lihle Mdebele. Lihle, please raise your hand wherever you are, our Director of HR and Corporate Affairs, as well as Harriet Maseko, the Executive Secretary. Chairperson, we welcome this opportunity to, as MDDA, to be able to present to you and honorable members of the committee our first quarter achievements. At this stage, I'd like to hand over to the CEO to take us through the presentation.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning, honorable members and the committee. We were going to present this as a team. I'll first give the overview, and then the program director is going to talk to the audit of performance information in detail, and then the CFO will talk to the budgetary part, but part of it will be dealt with by the program director. Chairperson, you can see the first slide, it shows who our partners are. You can see that we have grown. We have been joined by quite a number of broadcast service licensees who are now partners to the MDDA in compliance with the CASA regulation in respect of them having to contribute to this agenda. The first...
You see, CEO, you are putting myself in a difficult position. You say we can see, but you see, the honorable member is correct, because he can't see what you say we can see. So you rather mention those who are new joiners.
My humble apologies, honorable member. The slide we projected shows the new partners being the Heart FM, Igaga CFM, and of course YFM and Kaya, who also recently joined. And those are the new broadcast service licensees, and also East Coast Radio, who are all the new broadcast service licensee partners. My apologies, Jefferson. The first slide provides the context to locate our presentation, and I'm not going to talk to it, Jefferson, because I think we have presented this to the committee when presenting the strategic plan. In the main, basically, it derives our mandate from the Constitution into the MDDA Act, which outlines the objectives of the MDDA, which are in the main to ensure that we create an enabling environment for media development and diversity, and which will reflect the needs and aspirations of all South Africans. Our approach into delivering our mandate is in terms of providing grants and subsidies, leveraging and resources and support, technical assistance, conducting and funding research, facilitating capacity building, and advocating for media development. In the overall for this MTF, Chairperson, you'd remember we did indicate here that our overall objective is to ensure that all citizens can access information in a language of their choice and to transform media access, ownership, and control patterns in South Africa, with the purpose to strengthen the sector through provisioning and leveraging of resources, knowledge, and skills in pursuit of promoting media development and diversity. There is five key priority areas that were identified by the accounting authority in terms of pursuing our mandate for this MTF. They range from the first one being the grant funding. Under that area, a number of programs including capacity building, strengthening and consolidating beneficiary projects towards sustainability, which is the biggest challenge in some areas, in particular those in the rural areas. The second key result area is fundraising and resource mobilization. Under that area, the program in respect of partnerships and stakeholder management, I've already highlighted our new partners. Communication and public awareness with regards to the media development and diversity agenda. The third key result area is the research, knowledge management, monitoring and evaluation. The fourth is the advocacy in respect of media development and diversity. And under that includes the media literacy and the promotion of the culture of reading, which some members have been able to attend some of those programs. And then the last one is diverse and quality content, where we're promoting quality programming and production. The question, we also just bring back to your attention the general challenges that we do face on an ongoing basis, which include the fact that we have a regulation that prescribes how we should fund. And also we have funding agreements with the respective partners, and these prescribe specifically what we should fund and what we should not fund with the funds that we derive from them. For example, from broadcast service licensees, we fund our broadcast programs, and from print funding, we fund the print programs. So which means, therefore, if we do not get enough money in one of the funding sources, it means that area of our work will be behind. The one example of that is in respect of print media. The print funding has been decreasing every year from 2004, in the sense that it has stayed as 1.2 million up until this year, irrespective of the inflation and all the other factors that clearly mean 1.2 million this year is not the same as 1.2 million last year. Now, over and above that, that will decrease further from the next financial year. It's going to be 1 million from each of the four major print funders. In response to that, we have been discussing possibilities, including amending our law, the MDDA Act, in order to prescribe that those contributions be on the basis of legal commitment, as opposed to the current situation where it's on the basis of them willing and agreeing to support the MDDA. But part of those discussions is whether that amendment will reside in the MDDA Act or should it be a money bill, and that is a discussion that we are engaging with the National Treasury in that regard. The other challenge that we face is in terms of the matter that relates to supporting community radio program production, wherein we run that program jointly with the Department of Communications, and we have not been able to therefore continue on the basis of the commitment we publicly made in that regard, because of some of the non-renewal of the agreement with the Department of Communications. So part of the discussions we are discussing as a result of National Treasury's suggestion is whether that allocation should be moved from vote 26, which is the Department of Communications vote, to vote 8 of the GCIS, so that we can just get that allocation at the beginning of the financial year and therefore not be finding ourselves in situations where in the middle of our implementation, we have to review whether we are getting that allocation or not. So, those are just the generic challenges, but in the overall, our performance in this quarter has been as per the plan, largely, I think, more than 95% of our plans have been implemented accordingly. I will now hand over to Mr. Nkupane Mapiri, who is going to then take us through the detail of the implementation of those plans.
Thank you, CEO, and thank you, Chair and Honourable Members. I'd like now to take you through to our deliverables as we had indicated them in the in our strategic business plan for the first quarter, and that is the grant funding cycle, which is constitutes the largest chunk of the work.
When you do your presentation, where you have complied, don't bother to take us through. We not only where you didn't comply.
Then it's not person, I must not say anything.
you can say what you were saying and conclude, because you have done your work.
Okay, Chair. I'll battle to find areas of non-compliance. Let me find. But just to run through quickly, Chair, that let me illuminate what the CEO has said in terms of our print agenda. Our print agenda is in a desperate state, Chair. We have a number of small commercial and community newspapers that are needing support, and our support base is declining. As you can see, that we had intended to support three newspapers, but instead we've supported five. The reason for that we have a long queue of projects waiting. So at every board sitting, we take the opportunity to submit as many of the projects as possible. So this is why our print deliverables tend to move extremely quick. Of course, with community radio, we are on track with the targets for the quarter. We supported the radio stations and we've listed those stations in those areas, as well as in the area around the monitoring
of our projects, because on an annual basis we've got to monitor about 70 projects. In the first quarter we did 20 of that 70, and in the second quarter we've escalated those numbers, which we'll report to as when the time comes. Continuing with the key result area number one, around the issue of the research on the transformation of the media, we've delivered insofar as the terms of reference to the board, and the board has actually approved those terms of reference, and we're at a point where we're finalizing that part of the work that we want to do. Resource mobilization is one of the biggest challenges that responsibilities that we have, and we've gone out of our way to strike strategic partnerships. For instance, we had a responsibility. We have an MOU with the Independent Electoral Commission to begin to promote issues of civic and democracy education using our community media, community radio stations in particular, and we have that partnership, that MOU we've delivered. Part of the work that we're trying to do is to explore innovative solutions to support our print media agenda. And one of the ways that we're looking at is to look at the low-interest funding. So we are in discussions with the development funding institutions like the NEF, who has agreed to ring-fence a fund under the fund they call Imbeu Fund, to see to what extent they can actually support small commercial newspapers. That would be able to help us to create an enabling environment for them. And of course, now with the biggest agenda around the ensuring that we incorporate the youth of South Africa into a job training and creating jobs for them, we are in partnerships with the National Development Youth Development Agency to have a very ambitious plan around it, and we believe we'll be able to deliver on that. So those discussions are in the first quarter, those discussions were delivered, as well as also to prepare our project for the local government elections which we came from. So we did extensive work around that area. Chair, in key result area number four, or rather number three, again, there's a research that we need to have published. The board set in May, and they considered and approved a research that we had conducted, and we published that research around the viable business models for alternative film distribution in South Africa, because we realized that with the advent of the growth of community television, there's got to be some support mechanisms around that, and we want to look at all the entire value chain of community television. And one of those is around the issues of alternative film distribution in South Africa, and we want to look at community TV as a viable platform for that. Or we want to use this research, it will then help us to engage with discussions with the likes of the Films and Publications Board, the NFVF, and so on and so on. So this is what we intend to do. We have a role, Chair, on a key result area number four to ensure that we engage in advocacy work for media development and diversity. The honourable members would remember that you took us to oversight visits in Eastern Cape and KwaZulu-Natal. And following from that, there were discussions around the transformation of the advertising industry, and we're given a responsibility, Chair, to come up with solutions around that. And we're happy to say we have engaged with many stakeholders in that regard. We've developed a concept document because the members wanted us to come back and account before the end of this calendar year, and we're happy that we are on track insofar as that is concerned. And we need to take this opportunity as well to acknowledge the commitment that was made by the INC at the beginning of the financial year that they will support community radio. They have indeed come to the party. They've lived up to their commitment to that. And we're holding each other on the way to do that. The Brand South Africa, formerly IMC, Brand South Africa, formerly Brand South Africa. Again, Chair, we want to explore with other entities because I think that commitment needs to resonate in all the work that we do. And again, around the low interest loan to the NEF, our board has approved the draft a memorandum of understanding between the MDDA and the NEF to begin to operationalize this low interest loan, because we realize that there are small commercial publications that would require the kind of patient capital, so to speak, to enable them and to actually give them the kind of non-financial support. So ourselves and the NEF are agreeing, and we're beginning to ensure that we walk the path with the NEF. We continue, Chair, to ensure that the MDDA brand is strengthened and we are present, because we don't have the advantage of having provincial offices. We just don't have the kind of budget.
So what we have to do, we have to run the length and the breadth of the country and ensure that, you know, communities are able to access the MDDA. So what we then do on an annual basis to hold those kind of provincial seminars where we bring in potential beneficiaries and current beneficiaries and make them understand how you work, their requirement for compliance, and what the MDDA can and cannot support. Because we continue to get a lot of requests for funding. Some of this funding fall outside our mandate, but those that fall outside our mandate, we channel them to the right entities. But those that fall within our mandate, we ensure that we support those. And again, insofar as quality programming is concerned, that agenda that we have in partnership with the DOC, we continue to do that. We had intended to do one station, but we've actually done two in the first quarter. We're hoping that we'll be able to do others in the other quarters, which we'll report in that period. With regards to the budget summary, this will give you an overview, honourable members, of what is allocated per year. You can actually see that the MDDA operates from a very low capital base, but we do our best to maximise that, to ensure that public funds, we get 5 rand value for every rand that is spent. This is what we try to do at all material times. And you can actually see that 1C, our smallest budget is allocated to small commercial media, and this is the agenda that is struggling chair. The CEO has spoken about the 5 key results areas, and this is how this is what the committee has approved at the beginning of the financial year in terms of the budget spend. And the CFO will talk into detail in terms of the budgetary allocations and the spend and the variables for this for the first quarter, but this will give you the broad essence of where things are going and that we're operating on merely 36 million rand. We'd love to have to quadruple that budget so that our mandate could grow. Again, this is purely for information purposes, Chair. And insofar as the project cost, Chair, this is slide number 23. Our small commercial media, on the first quarter, we had budgeted 3.3 million. We spent just over 3 million rand of that. We could have exhausted that budget, but clearly there are some projects that we needed to review and relook at them, largely the compliance issues. We would not deal with projects if they don't have tax clearance certificates, but we work with SARS to ensure that there is that compliance, because largely the compliance is not because our people do not want to comply, because of them not understanding what it is that they've got to do. Others, because they will engage legal lawyers to go and register Section 21, as opposed for them to register themselves as NPOs, because many of them are non-profit organizations. So there's that misunderstanding in terms of how they would then need to register. It's particularly pronounced in the community media, radio stations in particular. But we work together with SARS now, and we to ensure that there's that proper compliance that is brought into the picture. And insofar as other areas, Chair, I think we are on point with our expenditure. And perhaps I would like to ask the CFO to take us through to the other numbers. Thanks.
Thank you, PD. Thanks, Chair and honourable members. I would just take you through to slide 24, spending trends on OPEX, our operational expenditure. On administration costs, where the budget of 1.7 million was spent 1.2, with a variance of 530,000. The reason being is that there are still outstanding invoices. You likely you'll see that for air ticket accommodation, which they deal at late. So we are starting to be in the business of chasing invoices instead of paying them. On the employee cost, we've spent 1.449. We've budgeted 1.449. We've spent 1.4. With a balance of 45,000, you likely that we had a vacancy which was filled in because of the equity requirements. Because if you go to our offices, you'll see you are in Africa, really in Africa. So we need to change that to comply. We are mainly black.
we need to comply with other requirements.
No, I'm not that.
Yeah, I just want to say I might not be black, but I'm also African, proudly African.
Apologize, honourable member. on the podcast.
or is based on that is out of the required numbers. Sometimes one board member won't come in, the following meeting the other comes. So I think it's very key that it also indicate to us then the attendance of board meetings, who's attending, who's not attending, because it's very critical in terms of the corporate governance issues to tell us the spreadsheet, how is it, how do you arrive on this conclusion. The last one on program admin costs. Maybe there's no explanation, there's a variance. And then the reason in corrective measures is not explained. Can you take us through that one? Thank you, sir.
So, Chair, I want to share this data as well about MDDA, which is something we're sharing. Over this weekend, somebody just says to me, oh, this little girl, there was a girl on Soweto community TV, just a little girl in her early 20s, black girl, and sorry for this black and black, but she was doing math, just like illustrating math, how you do calculations, and everybody was close to TV, everybody was there in exclamation and say, hey, we are shy, and she's eating it. And for the first time, I got so impressed that there is a little girl. You know, math in our schools are said to be a terror. Math is a terror. Science is a terror. Simply because people, in many cases, don't have good teachers. And this was a little girl who could demonstrate that, look, I've come from the same environment, same areas of poverty. And here I simplifying it, doing it, and making it such an easy thing that, look, it isn't as much of a monster and a terror as you think it is. You can do it. And I was surprised that the youngsters that were with me and even the parents that were there, I mean, I can see, but when they draw an attention, it means they were so impressed because you should have heard the exclamation. I'm learning under how small she is. Just look at her. And she's hitting it. And you feel proud that for the first time, poverty is being hit her very hard. And I just wanted to say to MPD, this was over the weekend, this last weekend, right there, and it was happening. And this is kind of things that we really should have, because this is the only way we're going to overcome our problems. Unless our own people deal with poverty, and our own people are learning skills that will help us overcome, and we don't depend forever on developed countries. Otherwise, we'll be stuck in poverty. So, I just want to encourage you because this is exactly. We can entertain, we can have him doing things. I wish, in fact, if we could even have a drama where she showed as a little girl doing it. But ultimately, when she's grown up, she's an engineer, she owns a factory, and she's employing people, and she can, you know, all this that we are doing in other ways. The big question becomes, what is the impact of it on our society? We always ask the question, is the society benefiting out of all this that we are doing? And when we see potential for the society to benefit, we become so happy, especially when we address the key issues of unemployment, poverty. Otherwise, why are we here as parliamentarians if we can't solve societal problems? Mm-hmm. But I really would like to congratulate you because I think now you are going into the right direction. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks, MDDA. That's your good work, I suppose, which you do on a daily basis. Response to the question?
Thank you very much for the compliment, Honourable Member. I will start by addressing the one pertaining to the board, and I'll ask the CEO and the team to address the rest of the questions. Chairperson, just to say, to give you an assurance to you and the honourable members, that the board attendance is not a bad at all. Just to explain why we've had this small variance of 7.6 thousand, is that we've had a situation where one or two of the board members, due to their work pressures, were not able to attend as many board meetings as they should, to the extent that one of the board members had to resign and has been recently replaced. And also, one or two of the board members, their work situations have had to change, much as we had budgeted for them to get board remuneration, because their work policies do not allow them to take remunerative work that therefore has contributed to this slide therein. Otherwise, we have a group of very committed patriots on the board who participate effectively. Thank you. CEO?
Thanks, Chairperson, and I'm sure members, you are going to, I understand that our annual report will be tabled today, and in that report you'll see that our board is indeed active. Back to the other questions in terms of audit of performance information. Honourable Member Mthambi, if you look from slide 16 to 22, the information there is basically for reference purposes. That's the annual budget and actual to date. The forecast for quarter one is not on those slides. That's why we did not elaborate in terms of those slides. The slides 23, 24 then gives you the detail in respect of this quarter. So that's why we didn't emphasize on that one. But in terms of then the questions with respect to I'll ask and limit CFO to the invoices and the program admin cost one. I'll answer the employee one. I think, honourable member, the main point there was in our, what the CFO was trying to explain, that in our attempt to, because this is a position that got funded this financial year. So in our recruitment strategies, we attempted to make sure we reach out to two of the communities, the one being the people with disability, the other one being the white community. And the applicants we received initially did not speak to those communities, and therefore we then extended the recruitment in order to reach out, in order to ensure that we have an MDGA family that represents everyone proportionally to the South African population. So that's in the main the reason put in context. The question of invoices and the program admin costs, CFO can explain that one. And again, thank members for the comments in respect of the work that we continue doing. And the support that you have provided in respect of that work. And this week, you would be aware, members, that there is a conference taking place here in Cape Town, Highway Africa. And some of the young girls who have benefited in terms of our media literacy program will also be here again and will be further trained. And therefore trying to make sure that we have young people interested in media and therefore seeing the career in the respect of media as they finish their schooling so that we can begin to deal with this transformational agenda of media from all corners, from making sure we our young people have interest and therefore will study and pursue interest in this area of work, as much as we also transforming the landscape in respect of media diversity in South Africa. Thank you, CFO.
On the issues of invoices outstanding, not necessary that the invoices should be paid on the following quarter. Let's make an example. As of today, as we are here, we have already booked our flight. But what they will do, they will invoice us maybe on the 15th of October. So those invoices was already by the end of September will not be paid, but was already accrued those expenses. So the payment has not gone through. So it will be paid for the following month. Now, it's not necessary that it will be paid on the following quarter. So we paid our invoice on 30 days. So by the time we combine our financials, those invoices have already not been paid. So we do make a follow-up on invoices not paid. On program admin cost, that small amount of 468, is that what we do on claims for subsistence and cell phone? 468 rand. Not 1,000. Yeah. Is that we have a closing date for submitting of claims on the 15th of each month. Good. If it doesn't submit, so it's closed. They will submit the following month. That's the reason why there is a virus.
But as you can see, that one is a very negligent amount. In other words, we, in our system, in order to continuously achieve what we always achieve, which is the clean, not just unqualified, clean, unqualified audit, we ensure that our systems are adhered to strictly, because that helps us to manage our finances. That's the reason.
Thanks very much, MDDA. I'm sure your issues are clear. We so wish everyone can be clearer like you are. I must also congratulate you. When you follow Facebook and so on, you are always posting your matters there. I'm sure the entire country knows exactly what program we are running, where and when and so on. So continue to do that work so that you keep people informed about the program of your agency, what you do and so on. Thanks very much for your presentation and everything. I don't know what to say because you always do as you stand today. Next one.
Thank you very much for having us here this afternoon. And we're also pleased, Chair, to be following MDDA rather than the other presentation that we walked in on. So we are pleased in a way that, you know, and also enjoyed being part of that presentation. I'm joined today by a fellow member of the Board of Trustees, Mr. Wayne Morris, who is a member of the Executive Committee of the Board, also chairs what we haven't introduced to you previously at any of our sessions, but what we now call our Partnerships and Funding Committee of the Board. And our CEO, Mr. Mulumetola, our acting CFO, Tami Kubeta. I must apologize for the chair of our Audit and Risk Committee, who couldn't join us today. She was scheduled to join us according to the previous scheduling, and unfortunately could not change her work arrangements to join us. So we bring apologies from Cindy Mabasa Kunyana. Thank you very much, Chair. And just to progress with our presentation, I'm merely going to do the introduction. But the person in the hot seat these days is the CEO. He takes full charge of the organization, and with that sort of mandate and responsibility, he's going to be the person that takes you through the majority of the presentation. Just the sort of overview in terms of the introduction, for Brand South Africa, which I'm sure many of you were around last week when President officially announced that we no longer compete with an interministerial committee, and our name reflects exactly who we are and what we do, and we're very pleased that we've achieved that milestone as Brand South Africa. The order of our presentation, we are here today to speak to you about and report back to you in terms of our performance, our quarterly performance for the period April to June 2011. And that is obviously embedded in our strategic plan that informs our work. And then just to recap, which we do consistently, our mandate, and then run through the outcomes and all the way through to the financial performance. In terms of our mandate, we do derive our mandate. We don't work in a vacuum, and we also believe that no agency in the country or departments in the country should work in a vacuum. So we therefore take our work in terms of the national priorities of the country, and that is if we want to grow the GDP, which is our mission, so that we can do all the other things that we can do as commitments to the country. And in the main, this is also driven by the fact that we have a national vision that drives the country, and hence the reflecting on Vision 2030. The impact that we as an organization would have progress in terms of achieving those national priorities is to ensure that the country increases its international competitiveness, improves its reputation internationally, and brings a sense of value to what the country and how the country is perceived by the world out there, and importantly as well in terms of the citizens of the country. And with that, we set ourselves the vision of being acknowledged as one of the top 20 nation brands in the world and the top 30 nation in terms of the Global Competitiveness Index by the year 2020. Our international mandate asks of us to build South Africa's nation brand reputation so that we can be a globally competitive country and be able to get a share of our stake in terms of whatever there is in foreign direct investment to the country. And very importantly, and hence the name change is as important to us, is our domestic mandate. The International Marketing Council, the IMC as we were called, did become, particularly during the period of this board's office, irrelevant in that part of our work was also to make sure that we built pride and patriotism among South Africans, and that's our domestic mandate.
Okay. Patterson, can I request the assistance of the Prince South Africa to get into the detail of the presentation, because we have a plenary, so we have limited time. Please just get to what you're here for. Thank you.
Perfect. Thank you very much, thank you, member, for that. In terms of delivering on our outputs and our performance indicators, of course, you know, this is measured by how well the brand is aligned amongst its stakeholders, and then looking at achieving the pride and patriotism among South Africans, changing the perceptions of South Africa amongst its target audiences, and then also being able to articulate and contextualize South Africa's policies within this context, and being able to do that by running an effective, sustainable organization. And we do this through our six strategies, which is brand, the brand strategy development, the reputation management, the brand knowledge management, the stakeholder and partner alignment, which is a very important part of how we achieve a country level achievement of these objectives, and then of course to consistently be a learning organization, ensure that we do that. Now, why do we do that as a country? It's so that we can grow our nation brand, we can improve our trade investment and exports, be able to promote, ensure that the destination branding in regard to tourism is achieved, that the diplomatic and economic agenda is also supported by a robust and credible brand. We have focused in this tenure on defining and aligning our work to the key markets, and looked at where we're at. There is an increased focus on the BRICS countries, as you see. You know, we can't be in all places as much as we'd like to be as a country. We focus on the BRICS countries, an increased focus on the continent, in the Middle East as well, and then, of course, defending our position in what we call the traditional markets.
So we're not giving up on where we were. We're saying we defend our position in terms of that. We work in with our organizations and government departments that pursue each of the mandates and competencies such as tourism and trade and investment in this regard. Our key focus areas that the CEO will be reporting on is in relation to the domestic and the international markets and then strategic projects that support these. From the domestic side in terms of the brand and ensuring that that is supported by all that are active in the country, namely the citizenship of the country, and then internationally looking at the programs that DIRCO and DTI and tourism would be pursuing. And there are some key strategic projects that we have been focusing on in relation to achieving this, in supporting those institutions. From my part in closing, we've reported back to the President since being appointed by the President in regard to the progress of the board in achieving the mandate that we were we've proudly been presented with. And in addition to that, we've had to appoint additional board trustees, establishing the funding and the partnership committee, as I've said. And then, very importantly, if we had to change and realign ourselves, was to ensure that the governance of the organization in terms of its trustees and charters, et cetera, was also aligned and putting in place a firm governance framework. There are some highlights. The signing and introduction of South Africa into BRICS has served as a major focus area for us as well. And then our active citizenship campaigns in terms of playing your part. I'm going to in handing over to CEO, say that we're very proud in that we did, as South Africa, win the Brand Finance Award, which made South Africa the most valuable nation brand on the continent and put the 34th globally. And, you know, with that, I want to hand over to the CEO to take you through the nuts and bolts and the numbers around our performance. Thank you very much.
CEO, I'm sorry, I'm taking off to page 13.
Thank you very much, Chairman, Chairman of the committee, honorable members. I will go straight through into our key results areas and the performance against business plan year to date, which is up to June 2011. We've given here a brief, very brief performance summary in terms of, for example, domestic perceptions, the nation brand reputation, the World Economic Forum, Global Competitiveness Index, the Reputation Index, as well as the brand equity. Now, there are two areas that as at the end of the quarter, end of June, you will see that our performance was, instead of being within the 35th range, was 37th for the nation brand reputation. This is because this is an annual measure, the same way as with the World Global Competitiveness Index. As you may know, the most recent one has just been released, where our performance will change accordingly when we report in the next quarter, or the performance of the brand, rather. In terms of the highlights, we put in some of the highlights there, Chairman and the committee members, and I think without really wasting time on these, let me rather go to the specific key results areas where we might not have realized the desired performance and proceed to give some explanations for the variance where such exists. You will see that in terms of our performance measures, in terms of impact, these are largely annual measures. And so we would not have some of the outcomes reported against currently. If we look at the specific result areas in terms of brand management, you will see that, that there are two areas where we highlighted that there's a tender that's been given out, or we are pending the approval of that tender, in order to ensure that we have a compliance tool. And to explain this, Chairman and Committee, the reason is that when we had a meeting with the Auditor General, some of the objectives we had, we were not very measurable. And so it was agreed that we should find measures for these particular objectives. And that is why you see that in year one of this MTF, we are seeking to establish measures so that when next year we can then report against those. So we are establishing baselines. So both in terms of the two, we are establishing baselines. We have a call for companies or service providers, and we will be issuing tenders. Increased pride and patriotism, you see the contributory impact there is that there is no significant variance. And in terms of articulating or contextualizing policy as it relates to competitiveness, again, that's another area where there was no previous baseline or measure. And so the role that we had to undertake was to ensure that there is a baseline. We expect the results to come out in quarter three because last year we focused on setting a framework for measuring. And now we have the field work in currently in progress, meaning that during the quarter, the field work was in progress. We expect that we will be able to start reporting results in the third quarter. If I move on to the second one in terms of reputation management, again, you will see it's a similar issue where a lot of those objectives did not necessarily have measures. We are establishing measures. So if you look at the global citizens, where we assess what global citizens' attitude is to South Africa and what their perceptions are, we are only now establishing a measure. So the field work for that is in progress. What we did in quarter one was to go through the process of awarding the tenders and getting the research work to start. So we'll report on that in quarter three. 4B of reputation management, there's no variance. Just to highlight again, domestic media reputation index, we did not have a baseline because there was no measure. Again, we are establishing a measure there, and we will have one in Q3. The rest, there's no variance, so I will skip those with your permission, Chair. The other issue I need to speak to is the change with regards to our business plan. This change is really the result of the two key issues. One is to do with the focus of our work, as the Chair has indicated, not just an international focus, but also an internal marketing focus, which has necessitated that we look at program managers and coordinators who will focus specifically on specific segments of the market that we've identified. It is also tied to the fact that we are now a stakeholder-driven organization, so we work with stakeholders and through stakeholders, and for that reason, we have established the program managers for civil society, for government, and for business. And in the same way, as the shift in focus towards the BRICS markets and other emerging economies, we have had to ensure that we have representation in those markets. So there's a changes in the business plan in that respect where to really ensure that we can then appoint program managers that I've mentioned here in South Africa, as well as ensuring that we can appoint program managers for the new markets that we're focusing on, Brazil and Asia, China, India being among some of those. So those changes come to about 4.7 million then. However, our administration and staff costs still remain within the benchmark that has been set and agreed with the board. Also suffice to say that what we have done here is instead of having agencies in those markets, it means we will have South Africans then representing us in those markets. So there is a saving in that respect. It's not as if we're going to have an agency and a person in that market. At this point, Chair and Committee, I'd like to hand over to the Acting CFO to take us through the financial performance to date.
Thank you very much, Chair. Good afternoon, honorable members. First, I want to apologize for the slides that you have. The total date, it shows 171. I think some figures didn't pull through. It should be 142 as reflected on the slide under annual budget. Same with the budget to date. It has on the presentation 46, it should be 69. I do apologize for that. When we look at the income, I have included an amount of 24,000 under budget to date, 24 million, I mean to say. That is a surplus that came from 31st March 2011 financial statement. To give a feedback on that, out of that amount that was not spent by 31st March, 8 million of that has been spent. But part of that is a 10 million that relates to the pay offline that could not take place in the previous year, but there's a process that is taking place. So of the 24 that was not spent, 57% relates to committed amount, of which almost all of them have been spent to date. There are invoices that is chasing its international invoices. There's some time lag on that, but I'm comfortable on the commitment in terms of purchase orders before year end. But out of that, there's a 10 million that there's a process that the CEO also will touch on that is coming with regards to pay offline. Then when you look at the expenditure to date, that is actual to date 30 June 2011, Also, the we have spent 19 million by 30 June, because some of the reasons was the tender that was approved late in July, and the field work, as reported by the CEO, has taken place. So we will see some of the expenses coming through. But also, some of the work with relates to international invoices, again, the time lag also. To date, we have received some of those. So out of the 20 million that was not spent, June, most of the amount has been spent, about 70% or so to date. So it's more of a timing difference. Then I also, by 30 June, brought the commitment that came from prior year, that the 5.2 is reflected there. It represented the 24 that was not spent, but to date around 8.4 has been spent. That excludes the pay offline that is going to roll on in the next quarter. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Tammy. As a comment here, from the financial performance, the point of view, we are comfortable that we are on track in terms of business plan. The only exception being obviously the 10 million that has been highlighted, which is a prior year issue, and that resulted from the country slogan, which, you know, we had to terminate that process and start a process all over again to establish a new slogan. So, however, because we aim to submit that in October, the expenditure in respect of that will still fall due. I think the corporate governance and control slide really speaks to some of the issues in terms of governance here, and I think those are all in track from a risk management point of view. We have those issues under control. We have referred to the issue of the surplus and what has occasioned that and what is our corrective measures and plan there. We have also made a submission to National Treasury for rollover of those funds, and we await a response for that. In terms of other issues such as legal proceedings, we wish to report that the IMC has one CCMA case pending, which relates to our previous CFO, Chairman, who that we had to let go of following an internal disciplinary hearing. There is a disciplinary inquiry involving another senior manager that has just been finalized, and that relates largely to the country slogan issue. We have highlighted some of the key projects for the next quarter. I will not go into those. But speed onto the brand positioning and the payoff line issue, which is one of our key deliverables for this year. And just to give the committee an indication of where we are with that process, which, as we said, is going to be a very consultative process. We have started the process of consultation, and we continue with the consultations. We've done a number of stakeholder summits in the provinces and used that opportunity to also consult. But we are also taking the opportunity to speak to a whole range of other South Africans, as you may see from this particular rollout plan. And we hope that as part of reaching through to the communities, our agreement with the MDDA will give us the access to communities throughout South Africa as part of asking them to help us define what this country stands for and what sort of a line would be appropriate for it. And so this process, we hope that by October, Chair, we should be able to come back and request approval for a line that South Africans would have helped us to choose. And we thank you.
Thank you very much, and committee.
Chair, given the constraint on time and respecting the members' commitments this afternoon, we'll be open to questions. Thank you. And thank you for your time.
Members?
We've eaten everything. No question. Thank you very much for the presentation. We request the second quarter, the report of that. It will depend on what we'll get, whether we'll call you or not. We forgot with MCDA, but I can see some of them are still here. If they can remember that we'll want to get the second quarter. Whether we call you or not, it will depend on what comes on that particular report. Nemi?
welcome, Mr. Manyi. I didn't see you when you came in.
Okay.
Thanks very much to come and look after your one of your kids. Okay.
Good.
Okay. You see, don't be fooled by these numbers. They've got the tendency of talking even if they're running out of time. Can you please come? Chairperson, you're more welcome, and your CEO and the other board members and the executive members who are here. The floor is yours.
No, thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. We'd like to present our quarterly report based on the strategic plan that was developed for the current year. Okay. I think the presentation is based on our five key strategic focus areas. The first one being to transform the MISA into a technology research, training and development center of excellence. The second one is to ensure the financial viability and institutional sustainability. The third one being to have a secure, efficient and effective organization. And the fourth one to improve and align stakeholder and partner relations both internally and externally, and to expand accessibility and reach of the MISA product offerings. And then finally, we'll also give you the financial result for the quarter. I'll hand over to my CEO to continue the presentation at this stage.
Thanks, Chair and Chairperson, Honorable Members. For this quarter, on the first objective, the establishment of the research center to do the landscape and impact analysis. Our target was to involve the experienced institutions on the field to help us design the terms of reference and the whole process of establishing the research center, which we have signed the MOU with CSIR Miraga to help us design that, as they've been doing research in several activities within the ICT. We have one paper presented to an international conference by our training staff members, and one paper was presented at the workshop of MDDA, and the challenges on presenting papers, researchable papers on workshops and international conferences are the funding constraints, which we're hoping that our fundraising strategy will address that, and the partnership with stakeholders will address that. The other KPIs from the second one, I will ask the COO to take us through. Thanks, Chair. COO.
Thank you, Chairperson and Honorable Members. In line with the strategic objectives that the Chair has already gone through, we are going to report against the quarterly targets as well as the challenges. In terms of accreditation with the relevant CETA, the process of retaining accreditation as well as ensuring that the learners are certified includes that they should be internal as well as external moderation. We have achieved external moderation for the radio and TV programs. That means that students who are studying, who studied for TV and radio and who finished last year, the 2010 academic year, for them to receive certification, what the CETA has done, they have done the external moderation with regard to that. The outstanding is animation and graphic design, because we offer four programs at NEMISA. So we had to extend the deadline for the external moderator to be able to finalize that process. In terms of accreditation of programs, we've retained accreditation for the Design Foundation, for radio production, TV production. The challenges around that is that there's been delays in the outcome of the application due to issues around review of training policies, the registration of assessors and moderators, as well as the action plan for the past cohorts who could not be certified for TV from the year 2007. So we still have students from 2007, 8, and 9 who, because the process was not finalized, they could not get their certificates. So what we agreed with the CETA is that there will be a process of recognition of prior learning, because these students were taught at a TV level 5 qualification, and the qualification that NEMISA is accredited for is a TV level 4. So for them to acquire the competence of TV level 4, we've already started the process of recognition of prior learning so that they can be certified at TV level 4. In terms of ensuring that we deliver high quality training programs, the delivery of the programs by the end of the quarter, which would be the second semester, 50% of the content was delivered for all the programs, and the moderation programs internally, there were some delays because of the limited pool of external moderators that are registered with CETA. And what we have embarked on as NEMISA proactively is to recruit people that would qualify or meet the requirements of being certified as moderators by the CETA, and then engage those people so that we can hand over their registration application to be certified as moderators for the CETA, so that we've got a bigger pool of certified moderators that we can draw from the CETA database.
We are not helping us. Don't read again. Just go to the achievement. If you didn't achieve fully, why you didn't achieve? Leave the rest. Just achieve. If not achieve, the variance is as you put it. Don't go to the beginning.
Thank you, Chair. Okay. Then I will skip that, because the issuing of certificate, that is a process that already has been targeted for October, November. The issue of graphic design, which is the first point on the slide number 6. The matter has been referred to the Quality Council for Trades and Occupation, which is a new body set up by the CETA. Now, NEMISA was offering graphic design at level 6 which is at the level of higher education. And we had wanted the CETA to be able to exhaust the process that we had already started with them of accrediting us to deliver on that program. So at the point when the report was finalized, the matter was referred to the QCTO. However, up to date, this matter has been, there's been a ruling by SAQA that the CETA does not have the mandate to accredit a public entity like NEMISA with a qualification that is at the higher education level, because they now enters a conflict in the legislation that accredits public entities to deliver higher education, and those entities would be public universities that are established by legislation. So for us to be able to graduate the warm bodies that we have already enrolled, we have to find an appropriate partner that is appropriately accredited in order for them to acquire the certificate through those bodies, because NEMISA now, in terms of the SAQA ruling, cannot pursue the CETA to exhaust that process, because the mandate does not lie with the CETA. But also the issue of the legislation, as a public entity, we can't be accredited as a university. The legislation that establishes public universities is different from the mandate that we are currently operating on. To deliver on the accredited and industry relevant skills programs, that process is still ongoing. We've done desktop research on that, but we have not yet concluded with employer bodies, for example, the NAB, in terms of delivering projects that would be employer approved. What we have done is to draft proposals for short skills programs that has gone to the DOC. There is a project that we have in fact been requested to do for FET training on multimedia, which probably by the end of this week we'll likely to conclude for higher education, for the Department of Higher Education. The last point on that page, we've already started to look at, if we are to increase the national footprint that NEMISA has, surely there are challenges around infrastructure that we have currently in order to be able to do that. Hence, we are looking at using blended learning methods so that you've got different platforms of ensuring that people don't have to be physically present in our premises to be able to be trained. So we've already started with the research around appropriate e-learning platforms, but obviously that target has not been met. But we are busy with the research in order for us to lay those platforms, for us to be able to deliver appropriate and blended learning models, so that we expand our reach. The issue of resources that are required in order for us to deliver high quality programs in terms of the need for a library, that is an issue where there's not been progress in this regard, but we have had plans where we have identified solutions in terms of, because of constraints of resources, we do not have budgets that are appropriate to be able to meet that. But there are aspects that we have already identified, you know, to bring people on a temporary short-term contract, for them to come, say, on a 1 day a week in order to do the research, do the on-site inspection, so that we are able to enhance the capacity of our library and resource center to be able to meet the minimum requirements of delivering high-quality programs. Similarly, issues around national as well as international benchmarking, you know, we wouldn't have done much progress with regards to that. And, you know, here we would be constrained by issues around budgets. I must mention that NEMESA's operational budget cannot meet all the costs that we incur in any given financial year. You will find that in any given financial year, what we do to augment the financial resources that we have, we run projects that generate additional income so that we are able to do other things over and above what that allocated budget from the shareholder can achieve. For this financial year, we have not yet received confirmation on any of the projects that we have submitted to the shareholder. So we are still in a quandary, because if you start to overcommit your financial resources and your funding for additional financial resources is not guaranteed, you are likely to create a financial risk where you will no longer be able to meet your operational requirements as the financial year progresses. So we've been cautious not to overcommit our resources before there is an outcome in terms of the projects that we've already submitted to the shareholder. In terms of an effective student welfare program, and Chairperson, this really is critical to support the profile of students that we have at NEMESA, given the socio-economic background where they come from. We have a student welfare coordinator at NEMESA, but we obviously need comprehensive support for those students where you've got specialized skills in terms of social work, in terms of psychologists, because the assumption that these learners have got a support in terms of the families where they come from, it was very quickly clear to us at the beginning of the year that the socioeconomic challenges that pertain to their family situations, you know, the learners themselves are affected by that. So they bring that to the school environment, and you need a much more comprehensive student welfare support program to be able to support them. Now, limitations of resources impede our ability to be able to give them a full complement of support, but obviously because we've got at least a warm body who's employed to deal with that, where she's got the skills, engagement with other NGOs, Department of Social Development, for example, does assist. We've been able to assist given the limitation of the resources that we have. In terms of business development, and maybe I will summarize because you'll find that there will be a lot of repetition, where we generate additional funding.
Actually, that's what I've asked you to do, to summarize. And we don't seem to get it. That is great summary.
Sorry, Jay. We have submitted applications for project funding on all aspects, on all respects. All those the projects have not been signed off yet, including local content generation, as well as applications that we've made to the Jobs Trust for additional income. To summarize slide 9, we have a change management plan that has been initiated in the organization. It has not yet been exhausted, but we have identified several key areas in terms of HR practice, in terms of systems disjunctures within NEMESA in terms of planning, which we are currently busy with. The anticipated final outcome in terms of change management, we are hoping that by the end of October, we should have a full comprehensive report that begins to indicate which are the areas where we need to have improvement, as well as policies, strategies that are more supportive of the strategic objectives of NEMISA by the end of October. I think in terms of the corporate services, IT and finance, I'm going to request the CFO to take on that, but I would like to finish with slide 12 and 13, because the content that is there on slide 12 and 13 still talks to the issues that we've we are talking about in terms of business development and marketing. Or CEO, you wanted to take over the issues of stakeholder engagement.
Thanks, Chief. On slide number 12, the stakeholder engagement is going very smoothly and well. There are no challenges that are that much there. It's only the market analysis. review of NEMISA's mandate as promised on the strategy. The challenges is the slow pace of it to engage the shareholders, but the process has started. Alumni engagement. The challenges are few. There are financial constraints, but in each and every project we engage our alumni to try to address the issue of job creation, those that are not employed. Any small project, any big project we get, we go to our database and get them. The extensive, on slide number 13, the extensive student reach, research, that's where we also increasing our footprint through engagement with our stakeholders, our sister SOEs, MDDA, and provinces. It's going smoothly. The challenges are few of financial constraints that we need to take a full media campaign that we cannot afford, but we're hoping our fundraising strategy will address that through engagement with the stakeholders to help. Customized programs. We have, there's no much challenges. We have delivered customized programs in Durban. We have just completed one in East London this week. We trained 20 in East London youth in multimedia. We trained 20 in Durban in collaboration with the Durban Film Office and Smart Exchange. We completed that. The pace of increasing the number of customized programs also goes to the challenge of financial constraints. Thanks. Then the CFO will take over.
Thank you, Chair and honorable members. Just to summarize slide 10 and 11, we have developed our corporate services policies and procedures, and the audit committee had asked us the first quarter that they should be benchmarked, which were done by the internal auditors by the end of the quarter. And with regards to slide 11, which is the upgrade of technology, due to the budget constraints that we've got at NEMISA, we have actually had problems with regards to what type of, how to actually go on with the strategy, that how we're going to fund the strategy. But we have a comprehensive strategy plan that we had started the second quarter, but not the first quarter. Nothing has been done. With regards to facilitation, with regards to establishment of a secure NEMISA campus, we had engaged the National Treasury and the DOC with regards to NEMISA moving to another facility or to a campus environment. But National Treasury has said that, you know, we should actually start also campaigning with other of our sister entities, who are like the SABC. So we initiated a discussion with the SABC to see what other available facilities do they have without actually spending a whole lot of money. That's what we actually embarked on. I'm going to take you through to slide 14, which is our financial performance for the period April to June. And now our direct expenditure, which is an expenditure that's actually attributed to the to students, we had actual of 1.8 million, which against a budget of 1.5, which had a 16% variance. With regards to our overhead expenditure, we had a 7.6 million against a budget of 7.3, which is a variance of about 5%. The next slide, we actually explained that our total income that we've got during the period was about 8.8 million. The total expenditure was 9 million and the deficit was 1 million. The current deficit is with regards to our unforeseen expenditure with regards to property costs going up, electricity, water, and other property costs that the company can't actually fund. Another problem is that our baseline from 2010-11 to this year, 2011-12, has grown by 3%, which is below inflation, which is 5%. So we have engaged the DOC and the National Treasury in this regard to assist us. The next slide, additional measures that we took to make sure that we restrain the deficit was we had additional funding requests to the DOC, generating training revenue with the DOC, with community radio projects and the National Digital Repository. The COO has already highlighted that we have proposals that we actually have engaged them on. And we have other entities like the MIC CETA, which is our CETA, and the MDDA that we have also MOUs drafted and signed with them. NIMISA, we are also going to other entities to actually make sure that when we advertise NIMISA as a training provider of choice by the to the DOC and other sister entities. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Member. Honorable Drogen.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for this presentation, but I must say I'm very concerned. The last time when we did the oversight with NIMISA, we saw a very dynamic organization, but what was presented here raised concerns for me. Let me go through my concerns. On page 4 on the presentation, you said that relating the qualification, it wasn't accredited before, and that in 2007 those who studied, they still need to get their accreditation. So please can you clarify that? If I studied in 2007, so because those courses were not accredited, so they will not be able to get a proper employment because their certifications have not been accredited. Can you just please clarify that statement? You don't give numbers. On slide 6, the training of learners is using e-learning, blended learning, and then technology training development. I just need to know how many students are using the e-learning method, because no my numbers are mentioned in this report. And then with slide 7, the effective student welfare programs is to develop economic activities and social awareness citizens on exit. How many? Because there's no numbers mentioned in this slide as well. Because you as NIMISA, you've always been doing it, and then You said you need social workers and psychologists. We've never heard about this, but now you need these kind of professional services. Why is this needed? And the MISA has been here for a very long time, and a lot of technology has been used, and only now you want to integrate, you want a technology implementation plan. So it means you never had a technology implementation plan. Chair, I'm also very concerned. There's a lot of columns under challenges. The same thing is repeated. Because the implementation could not be done because of human resources and capital. How is it possible? How they've been running in the first quarter because of all those challenges. I don't want to keep you all. I also noticed that there's a lot of expenditure. I didn't want to list them, but on page 14, what I've noted is with all those expenditure is overextended. How are you going to cope the rest of the year with all these overexpenditures? Thank you.
Thank you. Nami?
Thank you, Chair. The first question on learners who graduated from 2007 to 2009. There were challenges at NEMESA in terms of how NEMESA becomes accredited. For, like I said, we delivered the TV program at TV level 5. The accreditation that we had.
So the question is, what is going to happen to those students? Can you just focus on the question?
Okay.
What will happen to the qualification of those students? What is about their future? That's the question.
As I'm currently speaking, we've already started with the recognition of prior learning. The students have been recalled to NEMESA. We've spent a week with them so that they can get that qualification at TV level 4.
Some of the, in short, they were taken through a course which was not properly done. That has the effect of it.
Yes.
Now we're trying to recorrect that. So it was just like your fly-by-night schools which we see all over the towns and so on, where people just go at the end of the day, realize that hey, this thing we have been with is not accredited or registered correctly and so on. So was that the situation? Or what exactly happened? Why in the first instance that happened?
I'm reluctant to say it was a fly by night. The process of accreditation was started. The process of finalizing the process of accreditation was not finalized. So 2007, 2008, 2009, up until 2010, that is where we got provisional accreditation from the FITA. And as I speak, that status has been, the qualification on TV and radio, the FITA has confirmed that we're accredited to deliver on those programs. But there were delays for 3 years that we should accept. Some of the students are already in employment, so they are skilled to do the job. The issue is the certificates that makes them mobile, because it is only employers that either know about the quality of the programs that we deliver or employers who would give them an opportunity to do the work and then assess whether they are competent to be able to do that. But it was a risk to the learners that we accept. In terms of the second question on e-learning and blended learning, what we are saying is that because of limitations of the current facilities, if we want to have a true national footprint, we need to introduce blended learning. And what we are saying is that we have already initiated the research in terms of the appropriate platforms to deliver on that. We have not yet started to train using e-learning.
Can I quickly? Yeah, it'll come back. The welfare program question. Thanks, Chair. This is being triggered by the increment on the number that we're getting. Every year we're increasing. Now the campus is becoming bigger. The affordability and the capacity of one student coordinator who's doing all the welfare has increased, the demand has increased. So we've put up a proposal of a plan to the shareholder, because this is a plan which was not funded, a program which was not funded. So we've submitted that to the shareholder. And the increase on the demand of activities, the social activities from these students we're receiving from different communities, they are becoming more challenging. So that's why we need a full professional program on that. The technology implementation plan, since the member has indicated also, NEMISA has been there for more than 10 years. So this is a revision and review of the plan of technologies that we have in, because we have been just buying on top of what we had. So we're revising the whole technology plan. And the CFO will do the overhead expenditure question. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Honorable Member. With regards to the expenditure, NEMISA received a 3%, as I explained, NEMISA received a 3% baseline allocation increase from 2010-11 to 2011-12. This is far below inflation, which is on 5%. So, which means that if our suppliers were to actually increase their rates for this year to about 10 or 6 or 8%, we wouldn't be able to actually adjust. And this has been the case. We have addressed it with the DOC, and whereby we actually embarked on a cost-cutting measures, also to show them that, you know, for the first quarter, this is what we have, and this is what we will need for the second and third quarter. We have a commitment from their side that they would actually try to help us. But also on our side, another measure that we did was that we went on a business development, a comprehensive, extensive business development proposal, whereby we submitted projects to MICCTA to say, can you take some of our students so that you can alleviate some of the costs that we've got on bursary. Maybe you give us some of the bursary. Also with MDDA, to actually collaborations on that also. So we are trying to actually generate more revenue so that by the end of the financial year, we don't have a deficit. We also have a fundraising, as the COO has actually indicated, we have a fundraising strategy that we're working on so that we make sure that at the end of the financial year, we're not actually in deep water. Thank you.
Chairperson, I mean, I think one of the things that one needs to also realize is the fact that we, from time to time, also rely on projects that are coming from the shareholder. This year, we have submitted proposals, and we still are waiting on the allocation of those. And I think, I mean, you know, if you look at the deficit there, it's not really a huge deficit, because it's also based on assumptions of at least getting some of those projects.
No, sir, I just wanted to mention that, you know, we normally do a risk assessment once a year, which influences our strategic plan going forward. So some of these items may appear to be new, and some of them may appear to be things that are not expected in an existing institution. But for instance, if you see that our strategic focus number one is on research. Now, being an academic institution, research is important, that we do research. And it's something that has not been happening in the past, and which is why we've actually listed it as our key strategic focus area. You know, so it's not that maybe we are degenerating, but it's just that we're identifying other areas where we need to improve. Thank you.
Thank you very much. You see, Chef, the issues that they miss us like a person who got boils all over the head. Wherever you touch, it's painful. I think to a certain extent, this parliament will have been misled by the previous managers and board members about NEMIS. We're never given the true picture what is really happening in NEMIS. You are starting to deal with those legacy issues now, yourself as a new board and a new management. I think we have to accept that, because the way things were presented before this committee, it was like a shining example and so on. But now I think we're starting to face the reality that whatever was given to us in the previous, the things were not happening according to what things should be done. I think that's the reality we must face, and then accept that it's a remake up or renewal of NEMISA to be something else in terms of what we are trying to deal with. I think to be polite around that will not make us to be able to pull through to the actual challenges of NEMISA and so on. I think that's where the problem is, because looking to this report, it's a new institution being like re-engineered or re-established and so on. And I hope that your process with DOC of the remandating of NEMISA will take quick. I wanted to ask how long that process will take before we can close. Because I think that is the key issue. As long as we don't finalize that particular matter, I think your future is blinked, because nobody knows where we are heading to or going to under these circumstances.
That process.
Honorable Verma, Prohan, before you come to that, so that we close one.
Just under the budget, I see that there's no budget for student stipends, but there's an expenditure of 24,000 in the first quarter. So I'm just curious, stipend would cover one, because it's already been budgeted for accommodation and meal and all those things. Why still given another stipend? Why given a stipend if everything is up? Does that mean it's a second, third, fourth quarter as well? A stipend will be given to them? So yeah, just it looks like it's double budgeting there. Thanks.
Can you answer to my Dave's question and my question, Deborah?
With regards to the stipend that's there, that's the student stipend that we used for our project, our short course that we actually ran. It wasn't necessarily for the full-time course that we've got. So it's funded through a project rather than a baseline.
And the process of review, last week, Friday, we had an AGM for NEMIS, and that's when the deputy minister indicated to the board and all of us to say he has been mandated by the minister to put up a team to run that process of a review or repositioning. So he said they are looking at the 12-month period to complete that, but there will be constant reports on the progress on that process. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and Ms. Amtosha, I need to take up with DOC so that we understand exactly what that process means and what does it mean on your current activity. Because you might expand and find that the mandate come to be something else which does not align with what you'll be doing and so on. But thanks very much and so on for your presentation. Thanks.
I can see you are waiting for more questions. I can allow the members to continue because we don't want to move. But members, before we leave, we had a situation that next week original was supposed to be a committee week, which can be stroke a week of oversight and other things. That has been changed into the plenary week, which means there will be plenary and so on. And on the basis of that, it was a committee week, then we had application to have our meeting starting from Monday until Thursday. But since there are changes now, we just want to indicate that most probably instead of starting the meetings Monday, probably start Tuesday to Friday, not Monday to Thursday. Because they've approved the entire week that we can have the meeting for the digital migration and also the media diversity. But for 4 days, Monday to Thursday, but Friday was open. So I know it's sometimes it's difficult for Monday, that we can start probably Tuesday. We can start Tuesday and finish at 1 because there's a plenary. And then Wednesday, we've got the whole day, Thursday, the whole day, Friday, we can see how it goes Thursday, and what time can we finish Friday. But it's just I want to highlight that so that my members can reflect on that and give us a guidance so that we can change invitation and other things.
Definitely no Monday, Chairperson, if we can. The rest we can live with you.
Thanks very much, members. We'll try to do that. Thanks very much, members, for your patience. I know it's to stretch your patience, but thanks very much. Thanks very much in the meantime.
Thank you,
Oscar Albertino, can I stop you all these presentations? It's a full assignment. He said, yeah, let's first take you off to the meeting. They looked away the computer before we could get there. And Albertino promised that if we send her a quick email, she will email them to us. And I said to her, okay, just check the size because sometimes they're too big.
Mm.
One is 81 pages.
Yes, it's better than the one.
Is that all right? Yeah.
Okay.